It's midweek here on One Bills Live. Steve Tasker alongside John Murphy.
They've got more tweaks to the NFL playing rules. We're going to talk with former NFL Vice President of Officiating Dean Blandino at 12:30.
Also, one of the Bills' undrafted rookie free agents gave up on some Olympic dreams in track and field in order to become an NFL player. We're going to hear from Gerhard DeBeer today.
And we want to hear from you. Which Bills offseason edition will have the biggest impact this year, 2018? Give us a call. One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
We're not going to overtime today. We're going right till 3 o'clock straight up. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Welcome to One Bills Drive. Welcome to New Era Field. Cloudy, breezy. Bills outdoors today for the OTA, Organized Team Activity, day number two. We're indoors in our One Buffalo studio. John Murphy and Steve Tasker here with you till 3 o'clock today to talk some Bills football.
Don't talk to me yet. I got to finish that one last text before we go on the air.
Steve and I both stayed up late last night, late for a couple of old guys like us to watch NBA playoffs.
That West Coast stuff.
Finally, though, we had a competitive game in the conference finals. It was an interesting game to watch last night.
It was a great game. It was a huge mistake to stay up and watch it, too.
I don't think so. No, I enjoyed it.
I was up, and I had trouble getting to sleep. I don't know what the game did it to me or what. It was a great game. It really was.
It was a good game.
You knew
back and forth, 12-0
right.
run for Golden State.
Every quarter was a different leader, and Golden State jumps out 12-0 at the beginning. You think, wow, this is going to be ugly. And, Houston hung in there, and they stuck with it. And it looked like it was worse than that, and all of a sudden you look up, and they're only down by five, and it's like, wow, they're hanging in there. And they did the whole game. Houston Rockets with you could kind of get the feeling it was a desperation day, because if you go down 3-1 to the Golden State Warriors, you're pretty much done unless you're 2 years ago and you're the Cavs or something. But you just feel like you're not going to get back into that. And Houston came out in full desperation mode and pulled out the win.
Great play from Chris Paul last night. Great game from Chris Paul. Yep. Wasn't impressed with Harden, but I know he'll be around. He'll be back. He's not as impressive to me as Chris Paul.
Hey, every once in a while, Harden does stuff that you just can't explain.
Yeah, and they're on him, too. What's his name on the
Charles Barkley.
Those guys,
Kenny
too.
Smith.
Yeah, it was Barkley mostly. But even during the broadcast itself, Reggie Miller is all about, he can't dribble that long. He can't hang on to the ball. He can't get that deep into the clock. He's right. Harden kind of gets lost. He'll hang on to the ball and get deep into the clock, and now he's forced to put up a bad shot.
He just kind of goes off the air once in a while, right?
I agree.
They gave him an open three last night early in the game, and you think, wow, he's going to take it. The guy went out, kind of started to go out and backed off, and he still backed off, and he waited, and then he threw the ball across the court and didn't take the shot. And then the next time up the court, he took a contested three from 3 feet beyond the arc with a hand in his face, and he drained it. But – so why didn't you got to take that shot and hit it, and he just wouldn't do it. So Harden, I think, you talk about the players in the league and who's great, and you've got this man crush on Steph Curry, I know, and I see it. But when you see Steph Curry out there, you think, wow, that's a guy who's got. When you see him play, you can tell it's him. I mean, he jacks up that three from anywhere. LeBron is he dominates the game when he's on the floor and in certain situations. And you see all these guys that are really great players. Then you see James Harden, who's kind of, mentioned the MVP candidacy, the race this year and all that. Yep. And yet, he's different. I mean, he just doesn't rise up like that.
I agree.
He just doesn't jump off the floor.
Very talented.
Yeah, sure. They're a great one-on-one player. But
Houston's a gutty team. I think they're well coached. I like Chris Paul a lot. Golden State's going to win this series, I believe, even though it's 2-2 now. Garnett was okay last night, not great. But you're right about
not
I mentioned
Garnett,
this.
It was who are you talking about? The 7-foot-1.
Oh, yeah, Durant.
Durant, not Garnett.
Durant, Kevin Durant. But I do. I have a man crush on Steph Curry. I do. I can't take my – here's the thing. It's not a crush. I can't take my eyes off Steph Curry when he is on my television.
Even when
he doesn't have the ball.
Sounds like a crush.
I don't want to take my eyes off him. I like the way he plays. Now, admittedly, he is a liability on defense. He's too small. Can't match up really with anybody. And you can see as soon as one of the Rockets realizes that Curry's – checking him, they want to get the ball and they want to take him down low post.
Yeah, they post him up.
But on offense, he's all over the place. He can launch his shot from anywhere. He can get his shot off from anywhere as quick as anybody I've ever seen. I mean, he can launch a shot quicker than anybody really I've ever seen play the game. And he can make deep contested three-pointers. The finest shooter I've ever seen in the game. And not the best guard, not the best player, not Michael Jordan, LeBron, or not even Oscar Robertson, or going way, way back, Jerry West. But by far the best shooter I've ever seen.
Yeah, and that includes – and Reggie Miller was a great shooter, and he's sitting on the sidelines, and he is wowed by him. Because the thing about Steph Curry is that he gets it off so quick.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets it, and he just – and it looks like he doesn't even look at the basket. He just launches it, and he's got that, you know, the old-time guys, that you know, the jump shot, the textbook jump shot. You jump up, and at the top of your jump, you got the ball right on your forehead, and you throw it, and you follow through, and you see those guys kind of hold the follow through when it goes through. Steph doesn't do that. He just comes, and he's like, and the ball's gone, and he's like running down the court the other way, and the ball drops through, and they were right. They made this big deal the other day because Kevin Durant said when Steph – makes a three at the crib, it's like somebody else making a – it's different. It's, you know, it sets the crowd off. And they're right. I mean, when he starts hitting the threes, and there you go through these – all of a sudden, if Steph hits one or two threes in a row, you know that the Golden State Warriors, the next guy, whoever it is who takes a three, is going to hit it.
Yeah.
I mean, he starts – it's like contagious. When he starts hitting it, so does everybody else, and they go on these runs. Now, you know where it's going to end.
Yeah, they had one last night.
Yeah. And it was amazing that Houston survived.
A 9-0 run there in late third, early fourth quarter.
And they had a 12-0 run to start the game. They had another 9-0 run. Houston survived both those and won that game. It was amazing. It was really the best playoff game I've seen of these two conference finals this far. Both series are four games in.
There's an Eastern Conference Finals tonight. It's NBA talk. Steve and I are here to talk about the NBA playoffs. No, not really.
Well, we got to because it's relevant.
We've exhausted our knowledge of NBA. In the first 6 months of the show.
That's right.
Welcome to the show. We're here to talk Bills football. They are out on the field, the outdoor grass practice field right now for OTA's organized team activity. Day two, going through some stuff with, defense versus offense, just like regular practice. We talked yesterday about the pickup of intensity in the practice, and I think that is the case today as well. Tomorrow's session is open to the media, and we're going to get some reaction from players after the practice tomorrow and from head coach Sean McDermott before practice tomorrow. So a lot on the OTAs coming up tomorrow. But today on the show, we're going to talk – there's the NFL focus is down south in Atlanta for the owners' meetings, which continue today. The Bills obviously represented there, Kim Pegula, the team president there. They took some action yesterday on a couple of rules proposals, and we will talk about those. We'll talk with Dean Blandino coming up at 12:30, the former vice president of officiating for the National Football League, who has since moved on to television. You saw him this past year on Fox TV, Fox coverage of the NFL. He's also getting involved in college football officiating, director of instant replay for college football. Dean Blandino joins us at 12:30 to talk about the rules changes made yesterday, kickoffs and ejections for possible head hits. And then coming up after practice, we think it'll be about 120, 130 or so. Bills undrafted rookie free agent Gerhard De Beer from South Africa. We're going to get him to pronounce his name because it's a task. His first name is Gerhard, G-E-R-H-A-R-D. We are told that's not how he pronounces it.
Well, he went into the PR department, and they were asking him. He goes, that's not how you pronounce it. And they go, how do you – and you got to get this this Gerhard De Beer. You know, and of course, he's got an accent. But it's like got this guttural and you roll the R, and his first name is spelled Gerhard, but he pronounces it some other – we're going to have to ask him. The first 5 minutes of our interview, he's going to be getting his name right.
Gerhard.
Yeah, right?
Gerhard.
The guy's 6'7", but he only weighs like 260. Well, only weighs 260, but he's 6'7". So he's like – and he used to be a discus thrower, was going to be an Olympic athlete, actually, in South Africa, and decided to start pursuing an NFL, which to me makes a lot of sense if you're 6'7", 260.
Came over here and played – actually recruited at University of Arizona for the track team, throw the discus.
Right.
But expressed an interest in football, so they let him try out, and he made the offensive line for the Arizona team.
Wow. If I was 6'7", 2'6", I'd still be playing.
At age
56.
Yeah.
I'd still be on the team. I'm telling you.
Okay.
That's probably not. Maybe not.
Yeah. I don't want to shut you down right off the bat.
I'll tell you this. I wouldn't have covered kicks either.
Gerhard will join us at after practice around 1:30. Lots of time to talk with you. Lots to talk about, including rules changes. And we're trying to get a sense of where this Buffalo roster is. You get a pretty good sense there. If they make changes to the roster, you'd think at this stage they're going to be marginal changes. You think that the players they have here for OTAs and working their way into minicamp in a couple of weeks are going to be the players they take to training camp in the third week of July. And so that leads us to the question of the day. We have set up a Twitter poll for today. Want to get your involvement in on this. You know who the new Bills are, right? The new guys, the draft picks, the free agents, the undrafted rookie free agents. Want to know from you which Buffalo Bills offseason addition, which player will have the biggest impact? Not necessarily which player. Which Buffalo Bills offseason addition will have the biggest impact in 2018 and why?
That means this year, not long term.
Right.
I mean, who's the quick fix? And maybe who's the surprise? And we gave you a couple of choices.
Choices: Josh Allen, the quarterback, the first rounder. The other first rounder, Tremaine Edmonds. Brian Daboll, the new offensive coordinator. Maybe he's have the biggest impact this year. Somebody else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. On Twitter, 59% of you say it's Tremaine Edmonds. That's a lot. That's more than I would think. On Twitter, 25% of you say it's a quarterback, Josh Allen. 13% vote for Brian Daboll. 3% say somebody else. Love to hear you talk about it. Tell us not just who will have the biggest impact this year, but why. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You've been talking about one guy on that list for months now.
Yeah, if you've been listening to the show, you know I think it's Brian Daboll. I think coordinators are always the biggest acquisitions because they affect whatever all 11 guys on the defense, all 11 guys on the offense do. The philosophy, personnel usage, matchups, it all comes down to the coordinator and his side of the ball. And how they match up, and that's what the team's going to look like on the field. And of course, in this poll that we've got here, one of the key questions is how much Brian Daboll will affect Josh Allen, and he will a ton. Now, Josh Allen could still be the guy that makes the big difference for the team, no question about it. When he gets out there and starts taking snaps, he's going to make the big difference. But Daboll is the guy responsible for formulating the game plan, maximizing Allen's skills, giving him stuff he can handle. All of that, and he's going to do the same thing for AJ McCarron, no matter who's in there. So, and he's going to devise the game plans. He's going to devise the running schemes, with the blocking schemes for the new offensive line. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate that falls under his purview. And for a guy who came up from Alabama, was there for a year in the college ranks after being in the NFL for all those years with New England and around the league, he's ready for this. I mean, he's imminently qualified, and we'll see how good a job he can do with these new faces.
So that's one, and maybe you think that way, and if so or if not, give us a call. Lines are open. Love to hear you. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Which offseason addition will have the biggest impact? I would vote on our Twitter poll for Tremaine Edmonds. Look, he is with the ones already. The day he arrived here in Orchard Park, he was in the starting lineup. He is the Mike linebacker, the middle linebacker, the keystone of the entire defense. They are calling plays through him. So, in other words, he's got the helmet, the headset in his helmet where they radio in the defensive call. He relays it to his teammates on defense. Jerry Hughes talked about it a little bit yesterday. Lorenzo talked about it with us last week. I think for all of those reasons, the fact that he's going to be on the field three downs, he's not a two-down linebacker, going to be on the field every down on defense, going to be calling the defensive signals, and he fills a need, I think Tremaine Edmonds will have the biggest impact. I agree with the majority here. But, again, if you feel differently or if you agree, give us a call, 803-0550, and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Who do you think? Who do you think will have the biggest impact? I got Tremaine Edmonds, Steve, and a lot of people do
well,
on Twitter.
He's certainly, in my opinion, going to be the guy that takes the most snaps of the people.
Yeah.
And obviously now Daboll is going to have an input on every snap for offense, but But Tremaine Edmonds, I mean, it's a great guess because it's not even a guess because
a guess.
The guy's going to be on the field a ton. You're right. He's a three-down linebacker. The whole defense is going to run through him. And in a 4-3 set, the middle linebacker is supposed to make a ton of tackles. That's why they got him. And he's also a guy who, when push comes to shove, he's going to come up and on run play actions, the middle linebacker is going to step up into the hole, and then when he sees – the ball come out, he's got to turn and run down the middle of the field and get the middle of the field. That's what happens. And if they're in a certain coverage, cover two coverage, that middle linebacker's got to drop down the middle of the pipe and get that ball down the seam on the hash marks, and he'll carry the tight end down. He's tall enough, a little bit like he was kind of like Brian Urlacher. For those of you who don't know, Brian Urlacher is going to go into the Hall of Fame this year. One of the reasons he was so good is because he could stop the run, and then if they did play action him, he could still turn and run, and he was so tall, like Edmonds, it was hard to make that throw over the top and get it down the seam. So he was a great middle linebacker in the 4-3 defense for a lot of years, just for the fact that the guy could turn and run, and he was so tall, could cover a lot of ground, and it shut that play down. And it was it's a staple of trying to attack that coverage. And Urlacher, like theoretically Tremaine Edmonds, is going to be a stopper for that.
Let's hear from you. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Before we dive into this, Steve, did you get your golf in, your Tuesday night golf in?
I did.
It was foggy. Could you see the ball?
Soaking wet.
Did
soaking
you even
wet.
See?
Yeah,
did
yeah,
it
yeah.
Lose it?
It was good. It was dry while we were playing. Well, it wasn't raining while we were playing, but it was absolutely soaking wet over there.
Was
yesterday.
It foggy in East Wind?
No. I think during the day it was.
Yeah.
And it was last night, too. But it was it was completely wet over there. Yeah.
I was in downtown Buffalo last night, and it was foggy there. It was hard even to, you know, walk around. We went
You're surprisingly well-read. Tell me what you did. tell listeners what you were doing last night. Well,
I haven't read the book, but it's a friend of mine, a guy, we went Lockport area guy, Tim Wendell, a Syracuse guy. He was in my class at Syracuse. He's an author. He wrote a book, and it's called Cancer Crossings. It's about his experience as a young man when his younger brother got cancer and passed away, but all the work they did with him at Roswell. He had a book signing and kind of a discussion last night in downtown Buffalo at Just Buffalo Literary Center. Do you ever go there?
You're such an intellectual.
I'd never been there. Last night was it's not intellectual. It's a friend of mine wrote a book. You want to come and see him and listen to him say hello? Yeah.
Right.
I haven't read the book yet. I have the book. Got the book. Got it autographed. Have it home.
And he walks through his brother's battle with cancer.
Yeah.
And ultimately, he lost, but it was a decade long.
Yeah, yeah. He beat the odds. This is back in the 1970s. So
wow.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. So
it looks like an interesting book. My wife was starting it first.
You sound better than me because I was out hacking around playing golf, and you're sitting down having an intelligent conversation with an author.
Well, I was listening. I didn't really add much.
I feel like such a loser.
You know how good it is to go to something and not have to perform, by the way? You can appreciate this.
Oh, yeah.
When somebody else is sitting up there on stage answering questions.
Put your feet up.
Yeah.
Scratch.
Sit there and critique. Yeah, that was a good question. Like, that was a good answer. That was
yawn,
that's such a great question.
Yawn whenever you want, not worry about it.
I love watching others have to go
MC
through that.
And do the.
Yeah, there was a moderator.
They had a moderator?
Yeah, and I thought, man.
How'd they do?
It's good.
Because, you know, that's a skill set.
Yeah.
Running, you
I've
know,
done it.
Keep, you know, it's kind of like direct traffic. Like, okay, now we're going to do
right.
this.
It was good.
You're good at that.
Good. Yeah, but it was good not having to do it for a change, I will say that.
Because it is not easy. I mean,
well,
you kind of have to.
You gotta
it's
pay
not
attention.
Relaxing. It's not like something
right.
you go out and enjoy an evening. I'm going to MC an event.
No. No.
Right.
You got to pay attention. Anyway.
Which,
the
when you're
point I was
down,
trying to make is how
to...
foggy it was just walking around Washington Street in downtown.
Oh, in downtown it was?
Yeah. I mean, you could, you know, it was like, where are we? London here. What's going on?
Listen, you know what it's like. You live down here in the South Town, same as I do. When you head up, and it could be literally a whiteout snowstorm blizzard, and you get to that, and people in the local area know this, when you get on the 90 and get to the 190 turnoff there to go downtown or to take the 190 up around the Galleria, right at that exit is when it stops.
Everything stops. Every weather system is.
Right. It changes. It goes from white out snow to maybe wet pavement.
Yeah.
Or it goes from raining and foggy to even sunshine. So that's the spot. So downtown, if it is foggy or something like that downtown in the South Towns, I mean, it was nice.
Nothing.
Yeah, it was nothing. That's just the reality we live in.
That's your weather update today.
It's true, though.
It was foggy this morning,
it's
right?
It's true, though.
If
you're doing something, you got to like almost call ahead and say, hey, what's it like? You know, because, you know, for the important stuff, like if I'm going golfing, I got to know if you have shorts or long pants or do I need to bring the rain gear or the umbrella.
You know what I've learned over the years? And I've lived in Orchard Park now for 25 years. Never compare weather with my friends because I grew up in Lockport. I have many friends there. Never compare weather because it's always different. You can't say, oh, this is a lousy day, huh? It's raining. They're like, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
It's beautiful
great.
Here, right? And it's only, 25 miles away? But that is a big difference.
When I first got here, we used to come in, you know, and I always lived in the South Towns. And before this, I was way down south. I was like down at Colden, you know, for a while. And you drive in and, you know, you're white knuckle and you're taking it easy and you're taking turns slow. You know, you're driving really conservative because the roads are horrible and the guys come in and they're like, I could have mowed my lawn today.
Yeah.
And like, what?
You don't compare.
I know.
You don't even bother. It's
crazy.
Pointless. It has nothing to do.
Yeah.
All right. Off-season edition. Which Bills off-season edition will have the biggest impact this year? Give us a call or tweet it in. Let's take a call. You want to start with a call instead of a tweet? Let's do
that.
Yeah. You all right with that?
That's fine.
Here is Neely in Rochester. Go ahead, Neely. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Murph?
Great.
Tasker.
Hey, man, good.
Good. Biggest impact player, I'm sticking with the majority today, for sure. I think what Edmonds brings is he's a great dynamic player, stepping up and filling the gap. I think he's going to do well, sideline to sideline, giving the offense, a better look at, what checkdowns they're going to have to go through. And just his overall size is something I think that our defense really needed. The kid's form tackling is great, but most importantly, just the way he carries himself, very mature. I think he's going to be a great fit for calling the plays on the defense and keeping everybody on the ball on defense and just making big plays. So I'll listen up.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. I'm going with him. But let me say this too, Steve and Neely. Thank you for calling, Neely. I believe he will have the biggest impact. I do believe that, Tremaine Edmonds. But let me say this. This will not be popular. I don't think it will be popular with you. He may not have, at least early on, especially early on, he may not have a positive impact, Steve. He will be learning on the job. You know, they're asking an awful lot of this rookie who is extremely talented. Physical skill set is second to none. But they are putting a lot on his plate, and he will have an impact. If he's not going well, then the defense probably won't go well. Might not even be a top 10 defense like some people think. But I think that's a little shot at you. Early on, especially, will be the
I'm
key.
Listening.
Will be the key for Tremaine Edmonds. He will have a big impact, which is not to say he will have an immediate good impact. It might there's going to be a learning curve, I think, there with him. I'd be shocked if there wasn't.
Yeah, and I agree with you. There's going to be a time when, and here's what will happen. And people talk about the quarterback position. We have these young quarterbacks, and they say, well, now that it's the regular season, he looked pretty good in the preseason, but in the regular season, he's going to get complicated, disguised coverages. They're going to do all this exotic stuff, different fronts to look at. Well, offenses will do that too. And if you've got the middle linebacker who's a young guy, you can bet offenses are going to start showing motions, sets, personnel combinations that they haven't shown up to that point. And it's going to be up to Edmonds to decipher that and make defensive checks and recognize stuff and make sure that the front matches the secondary and the coverage. So, there may be a learning curve there, just like there is for a quarterback when you've got to make sure that the front and the stunt combination matches the secondary and their coverage combination. So he's responsible for that. So now he'll get some help from Micah Hyde, no question about it. He'll get some help from guys like Jerry Hughes. But for the most part, it's going to fall on that middle linebacker. So there could be a learning curve, but like I said, as the season rolls on, I don't think there's any question. Even if he does get off to a rocky start or if the defense gets off to a rocky start, he's going to be a guy that's going to be a major part of whatever success they have.
We'll take one more call on this issue, who will have the biggest impact. We'll go to Nick in Rochester. Nick, go ahead. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I think without a shadow of a doubt that Dable would be definitely the biggest addition. If we have a coordinator that's not trying to fit square pegs into round holes, I think Tyrod could have had at least better season than he did last year. I don't want to speak to him. He's going to throw 4,000 yards. But I think he could have also made a change instead of Tyrod getting in for Peterman getting swapped out. I think if we would have did a coordinator change, we could be looking at a team that didn't put up 10 points against – I'm sorry, maybe it was 3 points against their 10 points in Jacksonville. And we could be looking at a whole new system going on here that wasn't worried about fitting their system as opposed to vice versa, having the system fit the players.
Yeah, don't overstate that. I mean, don't think that just because the offense wasn't successful last year was like the coaching staff was asking stuff that they didn't do. Listen, that coaching staff last year was trying to jump through hoops to get their guy to make some throws. I mean, they tried everything they could think of to make it possible for Tyrod to be more successful in the passing game, and they just couldn't get it done. You gotta put it on the players at some point. I think Tyrod deserves whatever share of the blame for last year's lack of ability to throw the football as anybody. No question, the coordinator had his problems as well, probably at times. But I know for a fact that that's what coordinators in the NFL do. They try and maximize the skill set of their players, and sometimes they can get it done, and sometimes the players just will not do it or cannot do it, or for some other reason it just doesn't happen. But I think all of those things were in play last year. There's no excuse, I think, given Tyrod Taylor's physical ability, that they should have been thrown 31st in the league in passing. It just shouldn't have happened, and it came down to making decisions. I know that there were a lot of people who saw a lot of games live in the stadium who felt like they saw guys running open and Tyrod didn't throw them the football a lot, more so than they're used to seeing from anybody else. So there's that as well. So I'm hesitant to blame last year's lack of success throwing the football on the coordinators that were here last year, because I just know how difficult and what they try to do, and you can see it. There are guys running open, and you just didn't get them. They didn't get them the football.
Our question of the day: which offseason addition for the Bills will have the biggest impact this year, 2018? We got calls lined up. We're going to get to those calls, so stay put if you're there. We're going to read some tweets in a minute or two as well. And the NFL just now at the owners' meetings in Georgia, the league owners have approved a new national anthem policy. And I can read it to you real quickly. The membership, it says the 32 member team have reaffirmed their strong commitment to work alongside our players to strengthen our communities and advance social justice. They also believe that, one, all team and league personnel on the field shall stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Two, the game operations manual will be revised to remove the requirement that all players be on the field for the anthem. Three, personnel who choose not to stand for the anthem may stay in the locker room or in a similar location off the field until the anthem has been performed. Four, a club will be fined by the league if its personnel are on the field and do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. Each club may develop its own work rules. The commissioner will impose appropriate discipline on league personnel who do not stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem. So what they've done, Steve, it's a tough one. We've kind of talked about it the last few days. If you're on the field, if you're a player on the field during the anthem, you must stand. If you don't want to do that, you
you're free to stay in the
locker room or in a similar location off the field. And if you don't, if you violate that, you could be fined or disciplined in some manner.
And that means, that said, league personnel. That means everybody, not just the players. It means coaches. It means staff members. It means anybody who cashes a check for from an NFL team on that game day had better stand or be somewhere where they off the field. So.
Yeah.
It's not just the players that are touched by this, and we've talked about it. It's a no-win situation. You've got people who are very passionate about standing for the anthem and expect everybody to do that, and you got some that are very passionate, just as passionate about people's right not to do that and express their discontent. So, it's a topic. I don't know that it's going to go away, Murph. I really don't. I mean, it's going to be on the agenda for the foreseeable future, anyway.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. Yeah. One tweet I got to read before we get to the break, and we do have a good guest coming up. Postman Pilat says,
nice.
Do you see this one?
Yeah, I did see it. That's good. I wasn't going to bring it up, but then go ahead.
You're blameless here. You weren't here.
I know.
Says, you asked a very similar question last year, and a buddy of mine called in and said, Hauschka, you, in a sense, laughed him off the air. I don't think I laugh people off the air. I may have disagreed. He said, I believe you owe him an apology now after an incredible year of winning his games. I apologize if I, in fact, did laugh
did you
off the air.
Did you poo-poo the kicker acquisition last year?
I don't know. I don't remember the exact situation. Yeah. We probably asked a similar question. What's the biggest offseason acquisition? I probably thought to myself, gee, I hope it's more than the kicker. And I'd have to think about last year before I would – I don't want to think about last year, actually. I apologize. I don't need to laugh anybody off the air. I can laugh you off the air, but I won't laugh callers off the air.
Feel free to laugh me off the air. But yeah, you're right. But you got to know, too. I mean, just because you agree doesn't mean – or disagree
doesn't mean
right. You laughed. But by the way, last year – and you think about last year, and I'm thinking back, I can't even remember a thing about last year, about the last off-season acquisitions.
I mean, who was it last year?
Wow.
It depends on when we asked it, too.
I'm like brain dead. I can't even think of who they drafted last year.
Well, it was
Tre'Davious White.
Yeah. Was it Zay Jones? I don't know. I don't know what we were talking about a year ago. I don't know what we talked about
But
yesterday.
Even if you had this question, who would it have been? The acquisition, I mean, it shouldn't have been Shady. Shady was already here.
Yeah.
You could have been saying stuff like, well, yeah, I don't even know who would have been new last year to have this
question.
I want
a transcript of that show. I want to see if, in fact, I actually did laugh somebody off the air.
Don't get bitter. We had this conversation about Twitter yesterday. You should see my mentions.
Rules changes. The league's got them. I don't know if he'll be ready to talk about the anthem, but we can ask. We've got Dean Blandino standing by to join us in a moment. He is the former NFL vice president of officiating, the NFL football rules expert on the NFL on Fox. He's coming up next. Come on back for that. We will get back to your offseason edition proposals as well. We're just getting started. So we got a long way to go. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. NFL owners meeting this week have enacted some rules changes. They've done it really for the last couple of months. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who knows a thing or two about NFL rules. He was the vice president of officiating in the league for about 5 years. And he's also been on Fox Sports NFL coverage. Now he's on Fox and college football, a rules analyst there, and the college football officiating director of Instant Replay. Happy to have Dean Blandino on the line with us. Dean, it's John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. How you doing?
Great. Doing great. Hey, Dean, let me just get this clear.
Yeah.
Explain exactly your director of Instant Replay for college. What does that entail? Is that a lot like you did just before you left the NFL?
Somewhat similar, yeah. So I'll be responsible for training, evaluating, teaching replay officials. So we really have already started. We had a national replay clinic with all replay officials from all over the country in Chicago a couple of weeks ago. And so just putting together videos, talking to officials, getting the coaches and players on the same page. So it's going to be just a lot of teaching and training involved.
Have you given any thought to what you're hearing from the NFL about, you know, changing the catch rule, about the kickoff rules, and also this head, the leading with the head, that kind of all the new rules changes? Have you been any interest in keeping up with that?
Absolutely, yeah. I've definitely been keeping up with what's happening with the NFL. There's obviously been a lot of rules changes. We talk about the catch rule, which is something that has been discussed for many years, and then just obviously yesterday with the kickoff and the helmet rule. So definitely some changes, and I've been certainly keeping up with that.
Dean, did they fix the catch rule? Let me start there. Did they fix it, or just because I look at it and think, well, there's an area, it's good that you don't have to go to the ground, survive the ground anymore.
Sure.
But the part about a football move or the ability to make a football move, that part to me seems like it could be a little sketchy.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if they fixed it. The old rule had, there were issues with the old rule, and there's a subjectivity to it. And the idea of the receiver going to the ground, was he going to the ground to make the catch? He had to hold on to it all the way to the ground. I think that there was a more brighter line for the on-field official. I think this new rule, basically, there were a handful of plays that people thought should have been catches, and under the rule were not. So what the committee did was they said, okay, let's make these plays catches. And I think what we're going to see, or we're going to have to wait and see, is did that change? Is that going to impact the rule in another way? Because there is still subjectivity to it. Did he perform an act common to the game, or did he have time to perform an act common to the game? That's going to be subjective, and the officials on the field are going to have to make that call in real time, and it's going to have to be administered consistently in replay. So we'll see.
Well, Dean, when they started doing this replay for the catch rule and stuff, and it's been my contention now since they started revisiting it, is that no matter how you write this rule in the NFL playbook, and no matter what you look at on the field, there's always going to be every weekend, or maybe every weekend, maybe every game, or maybe once a weekend, there's always going to be a time when you're going to get a gray area.
Exactly.
And so no matter how you write it, there's still going to be a time when people are going to be up in arms saying that should have been a catch, but by rule it was not.
No question. And I think we'll see that. We'll see that this year. I think, again, there were some plays that people, the eye test, it should have been a catch. And I think this new rule, it does make those plays catches, but I agree with you that there's going to be plays that everybody sits there and we're going to debate it, and there's going to be controversy. So I don't think it's going to go away completely.
Dean, and you're going to laugh because everybody does when I say this. You know how some of the controversy can go away is if you eliminate the use of replay. I think employing replay to look at these catches and a number of rules as well has led to, people going frame by frame, video pixel by video pixel to see whether the guy has control and where exactly his foot is. Before the replay and HDTV and giant screen HD was employed, we accepted, that it's going to be a difficult call from time to time. We don't do that now. We break it down into video.
I agree. I agree with that. Look, I was around when they first implemented, instant replay back in '99 or the second iteration of the system, and initially that system was designed to deal with your more objective situations, the ball hitting the ground, a foot touching the sideline, that type of thing. And really, when you get involved in the catch rule, did the player have control? Did he have it long enough? Those are subjective decisions. And really, when you now add replay to the mix and the ability to slow things down and look at it frame by frame, it can distort what the official is seeing in real time. So I think it's a good point. I don't know how we go back and make catch, no catch not reviewable. I think that would be difficult to do, but it has created issues. Replay certainly has created, I think, a lot of the issue that we've seen with the catch rule.
Is there any thought about making replay live action, and you have to instead of breaking it down in slow motion, pixel by pixel, just watching it again and again and just seeing if what you see like the official does, and under those circumstances, just make the call the way it looks?
No question. I think that's something that, honestly, I think part of the conversation that was generated about the catch rule last year is, I think in some situations, the administration of the rule in replay was too technical. And going frame by frame versus looking at it more in real time. And we've always tried to teach our replay officials that when you're looking at those plays, that those potential bang-bang plays and catch fumble going to the ground, you need to look at it at full speed at least once or twice to get the true sense of what's actually happening, and don't slow it down too much. So I think that's a great point. I think that's how it has to be applied, and hopefully that's something that the league will do this upcoming season.
We're on the line with Dean Blandino, the former NFL Vice President of Officiating. I don't want to get bogged down in the anthem rule, but it just came out in the last 30 minutes or so, Dean. And there was discussion of a potential 15-yard penalty if teams did not comply with standing for the anthem. It doesn't appear to be that's in the league's, the owner's provision that they passed today, which I think is a good thing. You don't want to start employing on-field playing rules to take care of the issues like this, do you?
No, I think that would be putting the officials in a tough spot.
Yeah.
Starting the game with a 15-yard penalty because players aren't standing for the anthem or whatever it is. So I like the fact that they took the 15-yard penalty out of it, or the potential for that, but it is, it is something that obviously the owners feel strongly about, and we'll see how it plays out, because now the players, they don't necessarily have to come out for the anthem, but if they are out for the anthem, they do have to stand.
Yeah, one other thing, Dean, that's come out of this actually on the football side, more like the catch rule, is the kickoffs. I mean, and you know how this is. I mean, you've been in these meetings, and this was my first one where I was in that room a couple of weeks ago when they made these proposals, and they're very sensitive to unintended consequences. What consequences, good or bad, do you see from the new rule changes at kickoff?
Yeah, and I'm glad that you got to experience that, because I've been in those meetings, and this is something that, this has been, several years in the making. I mean, we went through this process a couple of years ago and got the special teams coaches together and basically, asked for suggestions if we have to change this play. And the way I look at it, I like a lot of the changes. The play is going to look somewhat different, but we didn't, they didn't change the basic, the basic foundation of the play. I like the ability, you eliminate that run up. The kicking team players, 5x5 alignment, there's no shifting. You can't have that. You got to be on, I think, at least the 34-yard line. Eliminate those two-man wedges and having those eight players, the return team players, within that setup zone. So what I think it's going to look more like a punt and where versus the attack blocks that were happening on the kickoff. Now it's more of a punt where it's more of a retreat and kind of a catch-type block. We'll see. The punt play is still has issues, with the returns. If we do see more returns, are we going to see, more injuries in other areas? And that's something why you put the rule in for a year, so you can study it. And then if you need to make changes, it's easier to make changes or get something out if you put it in for a year versus putting it in permanently. So I think it'll look more like a punt, and then we'll just have to wait and see what the data tells us after the season.
What's your opinion, Dean? Is this a one-year stay of execution for kickoffs in the NFL? Are they on their way out?
I keep hearing, I think there are a lot of people, around the league that feel that the kickoff is going to eventually go away. I would hate to see that. I think there's, I like what the league did this year. I like getting the special teams coaches and current players and former players like Steve to get together and to talk about how we can save this play. But again, it's really going to depend on the injuries. And if this change, you know, doesn't reduce the number of injuries, especially the head and neck injuries, you know, I think you're going to see the play go away at some point.
Yeah, I agree, Dean. I think they'll continue to tweak it. I mean, one of the things that was kind of prevalent at the meetings, the football guys said, listen, if you start in and you fix it, and I don't think it's unfixable, but I do think this, they're going to have to live with a much more wide open return game as a result of taking out the collisions, because, you know, those head-on collisions and the big train wreck blocks that we used to see, if you take those out, the return game is going to be better for it, because most of that stuff was on the attacking club getting to the kicking team, you know, having a full head of steam, knocking the return team out of the way. And I think if the league wants to save it, all they have to do is kind of resign themselves to the fact that you may get one kickoff return for a touchdown every game, to exaggerate it, to make a point. You may get a lot more big returns as a result, because things are going to favor the return team from now on.
Yeah, and I think that's part of it. I think, and that's a good, you know, a kick return is an exciting play, and so that may be something as you look at the difference between the punt return and the kickoff return. And again, I think we'll see it more like a punt return, but we just have to make sure that what type of blocks, whether those are those, you know, those blindside blocks or the things that tend to happen on punt returns, you know, that doesn't increase. And we don't end up with a situation where the injuries aren't really going down.
Dean Blandino on the line with us. One more issue, Dean, and this is the change in lowering the helmet to initiate contact. When mm-hmm. the owners first talked about it a couple of months ago and talked about ejections, there was almost a universal feeling of, whoa, slow down a little bit. And I find it interesting that they kind of backed off a little bit and made it a little less likely there will be ejections, but still – there's going to be a little bit different way that they call helmet hits, initiating contact with the helmet, right?
Yeah, this is something, and this has been a challenge for a long time. There's been language in the rule book for a very long time that prohibits a player from using his helmet to, the language says, butt, spear, or ram his opponent, but it's always been very difficult to officiate consistently because there is so much contact with the helmets that just happens incidentally. And I think this rule, is the intent is really good, and it's just going to be, can it be officiated consistently? And I like the idea of, you know, kind of increasing the bar being higher for an ejection, where it really has to be obvious that the player used his helmet to initiate that contact, and he had an unobstructed path, he had options, and the contact was clearly avoidable. That will lead to an ejection. Whereas more of the bang bang type play, maybe it's a foul, but you don't want to throw the player out of the game because that's just football and part of the speed of the game. And sometimes it's almost impossible to keep the helmet out of it. But I think the intent is good. I think we'll see how it's officiated. I think they're going to look at it during the week and certainly levy fines if they see it on tape, even if the officials didn't get it during the game. So, again, it's a good rule. It's a good intent. And it's just, can it be officiated consistently?
Yeah, and one of the things that you see in all the videos that they show to illustrate what would be an ejection and what would be a foul, a lot of times, and I think this may be one of the aspects they're looking at and focusing on, is that it's the second guy in on a tackle to clean up, where they've got a guy held up and the guy comes in trying to clean it up and send, it's the old thing of sending a message or getting a free shot on a guy and really lining them up. And when you come in there as a second guy in, a lot of times it's very easy to take a big shot on a guy. And on the other hand, you know, when the runner or the receiver, the ball carrier, whatever condition he might be in, catches it, when he braces for impact, he almost always puts his head down accept that blow. So I think addressing it on the offensive side of the ball carrier side of it is going to be more difficult than the defensive side.
No question. That's always been really hard in trying to – when we enacted the crown of the helmet rule, which was really the first iteration of this rule in 2013, that was something we spent a lot of time with our officials in trying to show the running back and the body posture of when he's trying to protect himself and get small and brace himself versus in the open field and some of the bigger backs that would just lower their head and use their helmet as you know, a weapon, for lack of a better term. And so that's going to be the hard part for the official, especially to try to differentiate between those two, because again, the back is going to try to cover up. He's going to try to protect the football. The head is going to lower naturally, and we're going to have some of these collisions. And we just need to make sure that the officials are able to differentiate between, you know, what is a foul and what's just part of the game.
Hey, Dean, thanks for this. I learned a lot. Thanks for talking with us today. Hope we can talk again sometime.
You got it, guys.
Dean Blandino, former NFL Vice President of Officiating, and, of course, with the NFL on Fox, he's going to handle instant replay for college football. And Dean joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Subway Eat Fresh.
If you want to know about Dean Blandino, and he was with the National Football League for quite some time. He was the rules czar. So, this is the way it was. Before this last year, when it was Alberto Riveron doing this, Dean Blandino was the first guy that when an official in any NFL game went under the hood to review a video replay, it was to the point where the league wanted one voice. So what would happen is the official goes under there, puts the headphones on, and Dean Blandino, the guy we were just talking to, would say, here's how to make the call. Here's the call the league wants made. It was Dean's voice. It was his call, his jurisdiction to make the call for every reviewable play in the National Football League, and he did it every Sunday all through the regular season and playoffs. It was Dean Blandino, the guy, the vice president of officiating for the National Football League. He was the voice of the National Football League. And you'd say, well, the official on the field made this call, and when he came out, he decided that it wasn't his decision. They took that totally off the field so that there would be no extenuating circumstances. It was one voice for the National Football League in New York who made those calls, and it was Dean Blandino. So he is – you talked to him about the rules, and as you just heard, he knew it.
He's got it backwards.
He had it. He knew what it looked like, and he knew what the rules said. And the officials came to him with questions, and he's the guy that made the call.
He sees my point about use of replay.
He does.
Catches.
Much to my chagrin, he agreed with you.
Well, and here's a tweet. I got to read this tweet.
Go ahead.
Scott Garcia, I love the show, but please – stop talking about instant replay. It's a moot point. Will not go away. Get with the times, John. Scott, I'm not going to stop talking about it. I believe it. And get with the times. I'm ahead of the times on this one. I am ahead of the curve here. I am a trendsetter, a leader. Look, they've tried replay. It doesn't work on a regular. It does not improve officiating. They still make mistakes. The catch thing that we talked about a minute ago with Dean Blandino is Exhibit A. It's Exhibit A of why replay doesn't work.
Keep going, man. Just rant. Just get it out. Just vent.
I am not.
Go ahead.
Get with
vent.
The times. I am ahead
vent,
of the.
Murph.
You get with the times. You get with the times.
All
you
vision.
Don't need
Listen,
replay. There's always going to be a human error, whether it's a guy looking at a video screen or an official on the field looking at the play. There, human error will always be a factor.
Murph, take comfort in the fact that all visionaries were once deemed insane. You're in good company.
I like that.
You're
I'm a visionary.
Company. You're
I like
a visionary,
that.
And you're insane.
More in a moment. One Bills live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. We've had a good start here, Steve.
Are we going to keep talking about this replay thing? Because now we're getting hammered on Twitter because. A good point. This guy is talking to you. John, what about you said on the air with the times, getting with the times. The other guy said, listen, get with the times. It's not going to go away. And he means the replays will still be there with the fans and with Twitter and other technologies. It's not like going back to pre-replay days. Fans will know the truth. Well, here's the problem with Mark Lamparelli. Here's the problem with your tweet. Going with that technology doesn't fix the problem. It makes it worse is what Murph's point is. All this stuff where the fans are going to see that an official made a mistake. They're going to see that they did all it didn't make it better. It has made it
they
a final
it
point.
They see it now,
right. They see it now. And they and Bills fans will tell you the Kelvin Benjamin play last year should never have been overturned. And Dean Blandino said that. And the league said that. So the league has admitted on a couple of occasions, even now with this replay technology, that they get it wrong sometimes. Because like to my point that I've been making, no matter how you write these rules, the game is so fast and so freewheeling, instances come up all the time that are on the edge of the rule. And you're going to have to dissect those by video. If you do, you're going to go down a dark hole, and we're going down that rabbit hole right now. We're living in it. And that's what's happened. That's why we have Dean Blandino on. That's why we have these rule changes. That's why they're fixing the catch rule. Because it's not because of replay. It's because the rule is you gotta put it in black and white. So when these guys come down there and there's a catch and there isn't a catch, it's because of the way the rule's written.
I don't want to get hung up on this, but you and others have said to me, well, they'll never do that. They'll never go back. But you have also said, and I believe you when you say this, the NFL does this better than anybody else. They fix it and make it right eventually. Not always, not right out of the box. I think eventually they're going to say, we're down the rabbit hole with this replay issue. We can't see any way out of it. Let's just do away with it. I honestly believe that could happen.
Because I do believe that. The league gets this right. I mean, they're in owners' meetings this week. They're fixing the game. That's all they do is fix the game. You go to the me in Major League Baseball. You go to Major League Baseball. They think reality needs to be fixed, not the game. So that's them. I mean, they can spend their time in 1942 and Joe DiMaggio all they want. The NFL is going into the future, and they fix things, and they fix it, make it better, and that's why it's the 800-pound gorilla, and that's why Game 3 of the World Series is a half-empty stadium.
What game 3?
I'm sorry. Did I just say that out loud? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that out loud. I'm sorry.
Don't let the facts get in the way.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
A break here. Coming up in the next hour.
My mentions are going to go absolutely haywire.
Gerhard De Beer will join us. We got Beer next hour. De Beer coming up next hour. Bills free agent, undrafted rookie, offensive lineman Gerhard De Beer going to join us as they come up to practice field any minute now. We'll get back more into our topic of the day, too. Which newcomer will have the biggest impact this season for the Buffalo Bills? Player, coach, anybody. Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We are at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
OTAs continue for the Buffalo Bills. They're just wrapping up day two outside. They worked outside today. Tomorrow, the OTA session again, number three tomorrow. It is open to the media, so we'll talk to some players after that. We're going to talk with Bills undrafted rookie free agent Gerhard De Beer here on the show in a moment or two. Meeting in Atlanta. NFL owners have approved a new policy, not rule, but policy for pregame anthem playing. The owners say that all team and league personnel on the field should stand for the national anthem. Personnel who choose not to stand may stay in the locker room or a similar location off the field. A club may be fined if its personnel are on the field and do not stand for the national anthem. It is a policy just approved this morning by the owners meeting in Atlanta, just announced within the last hour, and a policy that is already under attack by the NFL Players Association. Late yesterday, NFL owners gave approval a one-year plan for changing kickoffs. It'll be evaluated next spring based on injury numbers and other factors. It eliminates running starts for kickoffs and eliminates the two-man wedge blocks. More on that coming up a little bit later on in the show. The league owners also voted to award Super Bowl 57 to Arizona in 2023 and Super Bowl 58 to New Orleans in 2024. The next four Super Bowls to be played in Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay, and Los Angeles, and then Phoenix and New Orleans, the new awardees. Patriots owner Bob Kraft says he's talked with Tom Brady and says he will be there for the mandatory minicamp June 5th through the 7th. Elsewhere in the world of sports, the San Jose Sharks closing in on a seven-year contract deal with Evander Kane, the former Buffalo Sabre. Kane turns 27 in August, acquired by Buffalo at the trade deadline. Under the terms of the trade, the Sabres now get a first-round pick in 2019 instead of a second-rounder because Kane signed a contract with San Jose. Stanley Cup playoffs, Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. It is Washington and Tampa Bay, 8 o'clock faceoff. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio. Gerhard De Beer coming on the show with us, undrafted rookie free agent, a couple of minutes away as they make their way off the field.
We got some tweets regarding today's Twitter poll.
Yeah, why don't you check the Twitter poll first?
All right, let me give it a little context.
All right,
here we go. So the Twitter poll today is about this season, and we all talk about the long term and how they're rebuilding and taking the long view and some of the things that they do. And which Buffalo Bills offseason addition, that means player or staff or whatever else, which Buffalo Bills offseason addition will have the biggest impact in 2018 and why? And it's, of course, Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, Brian Daboll, offensive coordinator, and 3% is other. Tremaine Edmonds is running away with it at 58%. Brian Daboll's 13%. Of course, Josh Allen with 26%. There's you see at the top. And that I think it's an interesting Twitter poll because it does acknowledge that there are guys that aren't going to play it down. They're going to have a lot of say in what goes on. I think Brian Daboll, I've always maintained that coordinators are the guys that have the most say about what happens between the lines, and I think he's going to have a huge impact.
So what do you got on?
I voted for Brian Daboll.
I voted for Tremaine Edmonds. What are you getting on the tweet sheet? What are people saying?
Well, he says from Tom Spence, Daboll, good or bad, how the QBs are handled, how Shady is utilized, and I think there's a great chance for Charles Clay to be more involved. That from Tom Spence. Another one from Daryl F29. It's tough not to pick Edmonds, but the defense was only a few hiccups from being elite with Preston at the mic. It has to be Daboll, considering the offense was rock bottom in passing. There's no place to go but up, and scheme will be key in achieving that. And that's from Daryl F29.
Can I just stop you right there?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Was the defense a few hiccups away from
being
that, elite?
Yeah, that might be a stretch.
What did we say?
I think
you
might have been exaggerating to make a point.
they didn't get any sacks.
If you're 26th in defense, it's more than a hiccup to get
and
to
it's
the
more
top
in those three games, and Lorenzo pointed it out last week, the three games, New England, New Orleans, Chargers.
Right.
Brutal numbers. But that's not the only reason why they were 26. I think there were more than hiccups. They had other issues. Couldn't rush the passer.
Yeah, they didn't have a good pass rush last year.
They had games where they gave up a ton of rushing yardage. There were more than a few hiccups. They were great in taking the ball away. I'll give you that.
And I'll tell you what, that give me that against a run defense or anything like that. And if you can churn out five turnovers a game, you're going to win and you're going to head to the playoffs. And that's what they did in that first half of the season. They were absolutely fantastic at doing it. And that was the engine that drove that defense last year in the midst of a front seven that struggled at times and couldn't get much pressure on the passer consistently throughout the year. That turnover ratio was a monster for the opponents.
In that three-game rough spell they had midseason, in the midseason, they weren't getting takeaways then either.
Yeah.
That killed them. Here's an interesting tweet from NB, answer to our question, which offseason addition will have the greatest impact, the biggest impact for the Bills in 2018? NB tweets in, quarterback, no question. From the fan base to the front office, the clock is ticking as to when he starts, and any slip-ups at the position or the team as a whole will have everybody wondering, quote, why isn't the kid in there, unless he is in week one, which is surely possible. I do think that's possible. I was talking to somebody about that today here in the building who shall remain nameless. I don't know if it's likely that Josh Allen starts number one, but I think it's possible, Steve. And I get all the reasons why, you want to have him sit, you want to have him sit and learn, you don't want to throw him in there if he's not ready, but I don't want to close the door on that happening. If he's ready and if he's clearly ahead of the game, I would not be adverse to having Josh Allen start week one. If he gives you the best chance to win in Baltimore September 9th, I certainly want him to be the starter week one.
Now, let me remind you, we had a big discussion about this the first week I was on the show with you. We had this. There was a big article about, and it went back 15 years about the top quarterbacks taken, how they were utilized, when they got in the game, what their first 10 games was like.
You went through all that.
All that's, and there was no pattern, rhyme, or reason as to who was successful and who was not successful. And really, the message from the whole conversation we had and all the research that we dug up and was dug up by this article is that it's each guy. What he is, who he is, how good he is, it's his personality and a mixture of the coaching staff on that team and the players around him and when he was picked and when he was put on the field and when he wasn't put on the field and what the situation was when he got his chance. It was so many variables and so many different things. Sometimes when a guy was completely unsuccessful, he was handled exactly like a guy who was completely successful. And some guys, a guy who was a complete failure – was handled exactly, just vice versa. He was handled just like a guy who is a complete success. And vice versa, there was a mix of all of that. So really, here's the thing for me. When you're looking at Josh Allen, so whether he plays on week one or not, you got to trust the process. You got to trust the coaching staff, what they see, why they see it, how much is it going to be more important for him to take snaps early in the season, and does he give us the best chance to win? And if he does, then he's got to be in there. It's the only way to go. But if A.J. McCarron is playing better, he's more sound, the offense clicks better with him on the field, that's the guy you go with. And that's, you know, and at some point you have to make the call sometimes. Do you sacrifice a little bit of offensive production in order to get Josh Allen on the field because he does have an upside? Well, I don't know. I don't know how big a sacrifice you're willing to make that happen. And that's the real question.
On NB's tweet there, he says, quarterback, no question, from the fan base to the front office. Clock is ticking as to when he starts. But there's a reason why we wrote the question this way. Offseason addition that will have the biggest impact in 2018, this right. year. There is no question Josh Allen, his future, is the key question for the Bills over the next, 5 years, really?
Right.
3 to 5 years. But in 2018, we want you to know which addition will have the biggest impact. That's an important distinction.
Yeah, that was great move by whoever formulated the Twitter
I think
poll.
Jay did that.
Yeah, I'll give him credit.
Let me
throw
in a
nice.
Call here. Rich in Buffalo has some thoughts on this. Which offseason addition will have the biggest impact? Rich, what do you think?
Well, if we're defining that as the new arrival, that's going to have the greatest influence this season.
Yeah.
Then I'd have to say A.J. McCarron. His impact is going to be considerable whether he starts or not, but I do believe he'll win the competition in training camp.
How is his impact considerable if he does not start?
If he does not start, then having the second-best quarterback on the team still be a good field reader, leader, and player that can play within the confines of our offense, which we're not used to, I still think that will be beneficial because, as the Philadelphia Eagles proved, you're really only as good as your backup quarterback, and that can still make a sizable difference as well.
Mm. That's a good point, and he does have a shot at doing it, particularly if he starts on opening day and plays anywhere any semblance of passable quarterback. That the offense, just for the fact if they can throw for 250 yards consistently in every game, is going to look completely different because, you know, like I'm fond of saying, there was twice last year when they couldn't throw for 100 yards, and you're not going to win doing that.
And we can't rule out his individual skill set as it is, and he's got contractual reasons to want to do well.
Mm-hmm.
Not only does he have incentives within his contract to start and to play well, he also fancies himself a starting quarterback in this league. So he's going to want to play well and put that on tape. So I think that we're going to have a motivated A.J. McCarron, and whether he starts or not, that's going to help our football team.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point by Rich, and that wasn't even one of the choices on our poll. And I think it's a great poll because
Other was on there.
Yeah, he's you got to think A.J. McCarron is going to have something to say about what this team's going to look like offensively. And you know for a fact it's going to be a competition for who's going to play starting quarterback. And A.J. McCarron is very familiar with how that works in the NFL. He sat behind Andy Dalton in Cincinnati and was never given the chance to compete. And he sat there and waited and played well when he got in on offense for the Cincinnati Bengals at the end of the 2015 season. And had to sit and wait, went right back to the bench. So he is absolutely aching for a chance to prove himself at this level. And like Rich, the caller, just said, you talk about a guy that's got motivation. Now, don't forget monetarily. This is proven to himself who he really is as a quarterback. And I think you're going to get the very best A.J. McCarron you'll ever see.
I think, yeah, and I guess we should you know, I should think about that more often. I don't think guys lack motivation. Most guys don't. But in his case, this is his moment of truth in the NFL, isn't it?
McCarron. Yeah, listen.
To get a chance to be a starter, to have a wide-open position. Last year's starter was traded away. This is his defining moment as a pro football player.
I'll give you an example. Yeah,
McCarron.
Everybody's motivated. And you know how you've always heard the stereotypical pregame speech? That motivates you in that moment. It sends you out on the field with a little boost of energy. What we're talking about for A.J. McCarron, this motivates him when he's laying in bed at night thinking. This motivates him when he gets up in the morning. This motivates him anytime he thinks about football. He's motivated. He doesn't need a pep talk. That means when he lifts, when he runs, when he thinks about football, when he studies, in his free time, he is motivated to get better and play. That's the difference between being motivated and inspired by a pep talk and having a deep motivation for something that will change your life. And that's where A.J. McCarron is.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and Gerhard DeBeer is going to join us, South African native. He's trying to make the Bills roster as an undrafted rookie free agent on the offensive line. He'll be with us when we come back. It is One Bills Live. We're coming to you from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, and a special guest in studio with us, undrafted rookie free agent offensive lineman from Arizona, Gerhard DeBeer, in studio with us. Before we go any further, I understand that you have a way to you want people to pronounce your name. Can you give us that, please? That.
Yeah, usually I just go by my last name. It's very difficult to pronounce, but it said Gerhard.
Whoa, what? It is difficult.
Exactly. So I actually introduce myself as DeBeer when I go around. So
say it again.
Gerhard.
Gerhard.
So Gerhard is...
Oh, that's actually really good.
Gerhard. I thought I would just...
Wow, I'm really impressed.
I can imitate just about anything.
Yeah.
Gerhard, I'm going to get away from Gerhard.
I don't think I remember it, though, yeah.
Right? Don't say Gerhard.
Yeah, DeBeer. Not my favorite name.
So can you say it once more?
Gerhard.
Because, you know, I do the play-by-play. It's important.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gerhard.
Don't worry, I ain't going to score any touchdowns.
You never know.
Don't speak up. Don't
Kyle Williams scored a touchdown last year.
Oh, yeah, but he's a defensive tackle, so he gets the opportunity to more than
he
I
He got
would.
The ball. He carried
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he
does
an offensive
line.
Back. They'll line you up anywhere, believe me. Trust him. Yeah, they might put you. You're as tall as a tree, so they may just put you at tight end, have you stand up. And.
Hey, man. It works for Rob Gronkowski, right?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. So you were... You're a track and field guy, went to Arizona.
Yeah.
And how did it happen that you said, you know what, did they come to you and they say, look at that tall guy, I want him on my team?
No, actually, I knew I was going to play football before I came to Arizona.
Oh, you,
yeah,
did
so,
you lie to them and tell them you were going to play do track and field?
No, not at all. Actually, I told the track coach, you know, I'll come to the U of A if you allow me to walk onto the football team.
Oh.
Back then, I didn't know what a walk-on was.
Cool.
I said, can I play football? And so he said, yeah. So he went over, talked to the coaches, and they said, yeah, we'll let you walk on for football, and then you'll be on a track and field scholarship. And my goal with that was actually to get a football scholarship and compete for track for free so they can free up my scholarship because, as you know, there's scholarship limitations. So in that way, I can compete for track for free while also giving them the opportunity to free up that scholarship. And that way, I can also play football.
You grew up in South Africa, Pretoria.
Yes, sir.
How much did you know about NFL football? How much did you watch? Why was that a goal of yours to come
over? I mean, so I played a little bit of Madden.
Okay.
That was perfect.
Yeah, that was my experience.
You're eminently qualified.
Yeah, and I also played a little bit of NFL Street 3, I think it was. But anyway, so my experience was literally through video games. But my interest in the game sparkled when I heard a story about Marcus Hunt. And he's a defensive end. He went to SMU. And SMU actually wanted to recruit me solely for football as well because he came from Estonia on a track and field scholarship. Right. And then, I mean, this guy's a freak athlete, you know. He was weighing 270. He ran a 4.62 at the combine.
Right.
Drafted in the second round to the Bengals. But anyway, so I was watching him and his story. It was real inspiring to me just watching all this. So that was the first thing because I had heard of him. And the second thing was when I was getting recruited, the track and field coach of Nebraska showed me a bird's eye view of the campus, and I saw how ginormous that stadium was. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. And so, do we compete there for track and field? She said, no, that's only for football. They've been sold out for this many games. And I was like, wow, that's cool. Can I play?
Yeah.
And she said, nope. So, and that's when I started searching for that. And SMU wanted to recruit me solely for football, but they didn't have a men's track and field program. So, but all in all, I think it worked out for the best going to Arizona.
So talk a little bit about your early days here in Buffalo. How's it been going for you? And I noticed this, and Murph and I were talking, you're wearing number 67, who's
yeah.
a former teammate of mine, a beloved player on the team. It's a great number to wear. I hope you wear it well. But tell us about your early experiences here.
No, it's been
going?
Great. You know, I got some wings at a Bill's Bar, Bar Bill's.
The Bar Bill.
Bar
Bill's. Yeah, I live 2 minutes from there, yeah.
Oh, man, you're lucky.
Oh, yeah.
they got some great wings over there. And the weather has been fantastic. See, I love rain. And
so you're loving the rain.
Yeah, I mean, I came out of Tucson. There's no rain there, you know. Right. I mean, all you see is a green cactus and dirt. So for me, this is really cool to see some green. So so I love the rain, I love the weather and the environment. And then, I mean, just the environment around the building has been super, super inspiring because just the way that they do things, you know. A lot of people said there's all these rumors around NFL strength and conditioning programs. They're not as tough as they are in college and that kind of thing. And I know we had it really tough where we were because we went faster than anybody. And we were no huddle spread offense, number 3 rushing in the nation last year.
Right.
Yeah, so for us, I mean, I was in the best shape of my life playing there. But when we got here, I was like, okay, it ain't no different. We still work really hard here. And it's 110% every day. And that's the thing I love the most because at nature, that's what I am. Because when I was 12 years old, I actually dragged my dad to the gym and say, come on, these guys are kicking my butt. I need to go get better so I can kick their butt in rugby.
That's there you go.
So
with the
How
Bills.
About it, Murph? He's already drinking the Kool-Aid and loving it.
He
right?
is. Bills offensive lineman Gerhard de Beer. Did I do all right?
Yeah.
A little bit. Hey, there have been two South African natives who've played in the NFL, Jerome Paython, a wide receiver, and a kicker, Gary Anderson. Were you aware of that, or did you know that?
There's a third one as well, actually, Nos Buta. He tried. He's one of the best rugby players to ever play in South Africa, and he's now a commentator as well on our ESPN. We call it Super Sport. So, right.
Soccer commentator.
So, no, for rugby.
For rugby.
Yeah,
okay.
He was one of the best place kickers as well, back in rugby as well. So he tried to come over here and try the system. But, yeah, I know, I'm aware of them.
Gary Anderson was drafted here, 1982, seventh-round pick. Didn't play here, though. He got released because he missed virtually every kick in that preseason.
Oh,
went on to be a really good kicker for
–
huh? No, there was a strong suspicion back then, and this is how old I am, but this is, what, 35 years ago, that Anderson deliberately had a bad camp because he didn't want to play here. He went to Pittsburgh and had a great career and then played at Minnesota, played a long time.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
It's not my advice. Don't do that for your
no.
career. Play as hard
Please
as you
don't.
Can.
No, that's not me. So, yeah. I don't know anything about that. So,
go ahead.
Well, what was it like? You're there. Did you think you might get drafted, or did you figure you'd have to wait for the call after the draft?
You know, my agent has been in the business for quite some time, and I trust him tremendously. And what he told me was, every time he says, in my professional opinion, then I know, like, this is real what he's saying. So
right.
He told me, in my professional opinion, I think you'll sign as a free agent. He said priority free agent, but regardless, you'll sign as a free agent. Now, there are some odds that you might get drafted, but he said for that to happen, a lot of offensive tackles would have to get drafted. Now, you know, with all that happening, I was fine. I was prepared to sign as a free agent. Now, the draft was still stressful, and watching all these guys that I played with and played against and that kind of thing, watching them go, it's something that you can really add to your list of things to accomplish. I mean, there's 256 people that go every year. So to be part of that is a tremendous, tremendous honor, you know. And so I would lie if I say I wasn't disappointed.
Sure.
But still, regardless, I knew I was going to get an opportunity. And for me, it's not about necessarily what you got, but what you make of it. So for me, I came as a walk-on to Arizona. I ended up starting a bunch of games there. So for me, I'm a free agent here. I'm an underdog, and I can't wait to prove everybody
wrong. It's like a walk-on here as
exactly.
well. You had a pretty good career there in Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
Tell me, so you spent some time in Tucson, right?
Mm-hmm.
You knew two former Buffalo Bill teammates of mine, John Fina and Glenn Parker,
yeah.
who have not really coached you but mentored you a little bit and given you kind of the heads up about Buffalo and gave you kind of what do they tell you about?
Well, Glenn actually I spent a lot of time with over right. the last 5 months getting ready for the NFL. I did a ton of position work with him, and I tackle, guard, left side, right side, you know, versatility obviously is very important on the mm-hmm. offensive line, but I spent a ton, every day position work, every day, you know, and that's the way of a lineman's life. It's mm-hmm. technique. It was the same when I was a thrower, you know, the minor adjustments make the biggest difference for you.
Right.
And so those are things that I got to keep working on, obviously. But and then John Fina, right after I signed as a free agent, a few days after, he shot me a message and said, hey, here's my number, call me anytime, text me anytime, let me know how everything's going out there. I could tell you about all the food spots.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Well, that's a lineman's life. We love food. So
yeah, Fina was a restaurant guy. He knew all the spots. Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell us one thing. What do your critics say about Gerhard de Beer?
In terms of
what do you need to work on? What are you lacking in your game or overall skills?
One thing that really popped out was pass protection. You know, mm-hmm. we were a very grindy run team, so the ball was on the ground a lot. We didn't throw very often unless it was obvious pass situations. Even on third and five, we might run it because we were really good at running the ball. So. The one thing that I definitely know I need to work on is my pass game, you know, getting my hands ready, taking the right set, getting to the right spot and all that, staying square with my hips, and more importantly, consistency. So, you know, there's times today at practice that I was like, okay, that's I know that was a good rep, and then there's other times when I'm like, man, my hands are too soft. I need to be more aggressive with my punch when I take a vertical set or that kind of thing, so... I know my pass game is something that I need to work on a lot.
I've read quotes from you where you say you really enjoy contact. You like knocking people down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What about that attracts you? What do you like about that?
I mean, it's probably not something I can say on air, but
Go ahead.
I mean, the aggression of the sport. I mean, I love rugby the same, you know, and football is just that much more aggressive. If anybody asks me to compare football to rugby, I always say football is more physical. I mean, especially on the offensive line now, you know, as a receiver or DB, you don't hit every play. Offensive line, you hit every play. Mm-hmm. Somebody drops their head and just bull rushes straight into your chest. I mean, you need to take care of that without giving up too much ground. Or, you know, on a run play, when you straight up hit helmet to helmet with somebody because it's what it demands. So, and I'm fine with that. And actually, I really like that. I mean, there's something about just hitting somebody that makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
You don't really get to do you don't really get to do that in rugby. Although, if you do play rugby, it says that you're probably a good enough athlete to perform at the NFL at this level if you're a good ref, because you're a good enough athlete too. Because rugby asks you to run, turn your hips, run out. It also asks you to push guys against their will.
And for me, I believe rugby is actually the best developmental sport out there because it teaches you to run fast. It teaches you to run far. You got to be strong in order to play it. It teaches you to throw and catch a ball. It teaches you to attack and defend, read defenses, what lines you can run, and that kind of thing. Understanding that this guy running next to you has to be covered by a defender, because if that defender comes at you, you just throw the ball out. So for me, that was one of the best developmental sports that I could have played in terms of developing your athleticism. And I know a lot of more people started hammering on play all the sports. Do not try to specify too soon. Yeah, exactly. Because they say jack of all trades but master of none. But if you don't have a good base of athleticism, you're going to struggle to develop your full potential.
I had a great experience playing rugby in college at Northwestern University.
So much fun.
It's a blast. It's a great sport to play for a lot of ages, and I think football could learn a little bit of because of the safety. You didn't get any protection there,
You're listed at pre-draft anyway, 262 pounds. Is that right?
That's way wrong. It was the easiest thing. If you just Google my name, that's what pops up. It says I'm 6'7", 262.
What are you?
Right before the draft, I was 310, 315. So Coach Castile here told me he wants me at 320, so I'm at 321 when I weighed in this morning.
So you are where they want you to be.
Is that because of breakfast? You're 310 to 320?
The nutritious here is tremendous.
Oh, all right.
So that's good. It's not. I mean, you probably have more work to do conditioning-wise and strength-wise, but it's not like you have to add. I was thinking, wow, this guy's got to add 25, 30 pounds.
No, I mean, at least if I were to be 262. But no, my strength numbers are pretty good. I'm not too worried about that. More than anything, I want to focus on developing good technique, you know, because being consistent, a guy like Joe Thomas, look at him, one of the most consistent offensive tackles that you'll ever see in your life. Incredible player. Unfortunately, he got hurt, but played 10,000 snaps in a row.
I know. I was there for some of them, and
that's amazing.
I covered him in the booth, and he was, it was amazing. You see him stay down on the field at one time. I was like, well, how did it never happen before?
Yeah,
because
as an offensive lineman, especially.
But he did. He stayed durable and on the field.
Yeah,
and,
man, I'd love to meet that guy.
And you're right. I mean, the difference between the lower levels of football in the NFL is technique.
Yeah.
And so talk a little bit about the guys you're in the group, in the offensive line room, and your coach Juan Castile.
You know, the biggest thing that they told us was find a mentor. Find somebody who you can listen to and model and that kind of thing. And it's not something that happens on the first day, on the second day. It takes a little bit of time. And we've only been integrated with the veterans for a little bit now. So we've had two practices with them and a little bit of skill development with them. So over time, that'll come. And just watching the older guys and learning from them. And also, you know, they're very helpful in terms of asking questions. Nobody has turned me down when I ask, do we have inside or outside support on this or that kind of thing. So, the room's great. Everybody's very helpful. Everybody's good people. So I really enjoy the room.
Did I read where Rich Rodriguez was your coach at Arizona? Did he talk about you as a potential punter once?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can boot the ball pretty good.
Can you?
Yeah. Now, when it comes again, consistency.
Yeah.
But when I got out there, I remember it was after my first practice, and I told them, Coach, I can punt. This was the afternoon before the practice. He said, okay, after practice, we'll get you some shoes out there, and we'll see you punt. And so I just took that ball and I just blasted it 75 yards. So, so and
everybody punts in rugby. So yeah, you had some experience.
Exactly. So I mean, I just and I actually kicked to the post as well. So after you score a try. So, but I remember this very, very vividly. The special teams coordinator at the time, Charlie Regal, he had a stopwatch with me, and they timed the hang time. And I booted it 75 yards. He said, "What's that? 75 yards? 5 second hang time? Welcome to the program."
Yeah, right.
I was like, "Oh, was that good? Thanks."
So, when you walked on there, did they always put you on the offensive line, or did they have another position?
I started out at defensive end.
Okay.
Moved to tight end after a little bit, stayed there for about two, three games into the season, and then I'm not stupid. The coaches kept telling me, you know, "Wow, you'd be a good offensive tackle. You'd be a good offensive tackle." I'm like, "All right.
Move me."
Yeah.
You were perfectly willing to do it.
Though, you know, I'm like, I've been playing this game for, 2 months? Like, just tell me what to do, man. Yeah. So they moved me to offensive line, and I went up to the offensive line coach. I said, "Hey, coach, I'm going to start at the offensive line next practice." He said, "Really?" I said, "I mean, yeah, you guys have been hinting towards it." Like, He said, "Okay." So, yeah, and ever
did
since
did you make
then,
the call, or did they tell you? Did you just say, "Listen, I'm going to start doing it"?
No, they just hinted towards it. I said,
"And
all
you
right,
walked
let's
over
to
the coach and said, I'm going to change."
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You almost made the Olympics throwing the discus.
Yeah.
You were third in the world at one point, right, in junior
age category. So, yeah, World Youth Championships, right. 2011 France. I won a bronze medal, set a national record, and a world-leading distance in 2011 Commonwealth Youth Games in Isle of Man. And then in 2012, I won the bronze medal again in Spain. So
there's a picture there of you. And obviously, you're probably, six at least there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look young.
So there was actually at national championship at
that
Oregon.
That was last year, or two years ago.
Yeah, but that one you saw me in the South African colors, I believe that was in Barcelona right after I'd won the bronze medal. I was about 235 there. Uh-huh. So
yeah, you look different.
Yeah.
Have you walked?
We all look different when we're that. Yeah. Right?
Have you walked away from discus? Are you finished? You think?
Right now, yeah. You know, the thing about it is I can after college, you know, putting on pads again and trying to pick up football again. It's one of the most difficult things to do to try to integrate yourself back into the NFL. So if I want a shot, this is my shot. But the discus, I can always pick up, throw far, and drag some attention. And I'll say, okay, we'll send you to this championship. So
it'll be a legend if you make it and they're playing, and all the TV announcers will say, "He didn't even know how to put on pads when he first came to the NFL." Is that true? I've read that.
100%. Yeah, my locker mate, Luca Bruno, I looked at the pads. Obviously, you know, I knew which side of the helmet went on front.
Right.
But when I turned to my locker mate, I was like, "How do you put these pads on?" He said, "Wait, are you kidding?" I said, "No, I'm being serious, dude." He said, "Have you ever played football?" I said, "No." He said, "You're at a D1 Power 5 school and you never played football?" It's like, yeah, what does that mean? So I didn't know what Power 5 was at the time either, so... I mean, so he showed Power me how to put on my pads, and I mean, I got a ton of stories about that. They lined me up in slot. This was when I was still playing tight end, and they said, "Go block the corner." We were running a wide receiver screen. So I ran to the corner of the end zone looking for somebody to block. So it was pretty bad, man. It was pretty bad.
It's a long road.
I also lined up in a three-point at the slot side. So.
Oh, I got you. Yeah,
yeah, so it was –
You have a book.
It was a rough
you.
Start.
If you yeah, make this, there's a book in you here somewhere.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
There's a
yeah.
lot of good stories in that one.
Great stories. Gerhard, thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks great for great having me, guys. Appreciate
congratulations
it.
And good luck.
Best
thank
of luck
you.
To you.
Thank you for
Gerhard,
having me.
Gerhard, did I say it right?
Gerhard.
Oh, that's better.
Gerhard DeBeer, Bill's offensive lineman, undrafted rookie free agent from Arizona, joining us in studio. We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasker coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Really enjoyed talking to our last guest. Problem is his first name, Steve. It's going to be a problem for me. I tried.
Gerhard.
I don't know. I think my recommendation is...
When he says it, I can say it.
Right.
I can't do it.
Now I forgot.
I can't.
My recommendation is he goes with Jerry. Jerry DeBeer. Jerry Mathers as the Beaver. No. Gerhard. I don't know how to say it.
Gerhard.
Great talker, great story. Like I said, there's a book there, right? If he makes this,
are you kidding? He didn't go block the corner, and he ran to the corner of the end zone, and looking for somebody to block.
Oh man,
didn't know how to put his pads on.
That is good stuff.
He really figured out. Thinking. He said he figured out how to put the helmet on because of the face mask, but everything else is like, wow.
Thanks to Jerry.
If that guy turns into a really good player, that's going to be quite the tale.
Yep. Pretty good story. We loved having him in here. We'd love to hear from you. We got phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. A lot of stuff to talk about we haven't even touched on yet. But let's circle back and get back to where we started the show with newcomers to the Buffalo roster. Maybe it's Gerhard DeBeer. Which Bills offseason edition will have the biggest impact in 2018 and why? On Twitter, 59%. A lot of you think it's going to be Tremaine Edmonds, 58%, the first-round linebacker. 26% say quarterback Josh Allen. 13% say Brian Daboll. 3% have somebody else in mind. Steve says Daboll. I say Edmonds. What do you say? Give us a call. Let's discuss. We can talk about that. We can talk about some of the rules changes that have been approved this week as the NFL owners' meetings, I would imagine, are wrapping up shortly down in Atlanta, Georgia. Kickoff changes and changes on ejections. We got a couple of phone calls. People want to talk about that. Steve, want to do those first?
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
Dan in Florida. Hi, Dan. Welcome. You're on the air. Dan in Florida. Are you there, Dan?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're great, Dan. Thank you.
Fantastic.
Go ahead, Dan.
So two things. One is, by the way, this is an aside. Steve, it was a real pleasure meeting you in the early 90s. You know, when I was at Wegmans and you were doing a signing, my sister was a director there, and she got me to the front of the line, and I got to actually shake you, not just get a signing, but shake your hand. So it was a real pleasure. So thank you for that.
My pleasure.
No.
I don't remember. I got to tell you, Dan, I don't remember, but go ahead. I'm glad it was a positive experience.
It was 20 years ago. I mean, like, how would you? So, okay, two things. One, Tremaine Edmonds, agree 100%. I think he's going to have a little bit of a learning curve in the beginning, but I think that if you look at the entirety of the season, that he will be a tremendous addition to the team.
Okay.
If you've ever listened to NFL radio, which I know you guys do because you have some of those analysts on your show, you know, Pat and Mills on Moving the Chains basically made it a position, and they really proved it last year that just replace the kickoff with the punt. I mean, like, you even had an owner the other day say, you know, hey, listen, let's, you know, we need it closer to, like, to the punt. And the point was is that, like, you can change the yard line and all that kind of stuff. There's significantly less injuries. And it just made complete sense to me because it's still exciting. And you're not like, now it's my time to go to the bathroom or go get a sandwich or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you, Dan. That's you're right. But here's the thing, and I get that about just changing. I'm not here, and I don't think the league will just say, "Hey, let's just do this. Hey, let's just replace it and move on." I think they're really interested in saving the play if it's possible. And what they're doing is with this new kickoff alignment thing. Everybody's saying, "Hey, it's going to look like a punt." It's not going to look like a punt. It's going to look like a kickoff. Slightly different, but it's going to be taught, and the techniques are going to be like a punt. So you're going to have a punt return, but it's going to be in the form of a kickoff. I don't want to put the punter back out there and have him snap the football and do all of that. They're going to kick it off, and then they're going to make it, because of the alignment that they're going to force, they're going to make it into, they say it looks like a punt. Let's just make it a punt. No. Keep the kickoff in the game. Change the alignment rules so that the blocks and the techniques both teams use on the play are like a punt, but they look like a kickoff. So that's a better way to do it. And I think the way they're doing it is going to be really good. I think it will add something. It could possibly, and there's no way that you can't see it. Listen, when you hang around it and you talk to these special teams coaches, here's the thing. And they can make it possible for this play to become more important and more volatile, particularly for the return team, than it has been in the past, and still make it a safer play. That's what they're going to do, and I think that's what these tweaks, if they don't work like that this year, they can tweak it further and make sure they do. I think the only consequence they got to be willing to live with is for big returns more often and having it harder to cover kicks.
Who's not in favor of that?
I don't know if all of them are. I don't know if they're you know, there's going to be some head coaches say, I don't want to give up a kickoff return every second game.
Yeah.
But if it's part of the game, and if you can, and if you can, yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the best things ever, and I think they can do that with the way they're tweaking it now. Don't sell this short about what it could mean to the game. I mean, and I emailed during the run up to these meetings for the kickoff, and I don't mean to get off topic of Dan, the caller from Florida, just got into, but I emailed Troy Vincent on the run up to this and told him this is an incredible opportunity to make special teams even more important in the game, to add some excitement to a play that has been pushed aside, to put something back into the game that everybody was afraid was going to be leaving the game. And I think they really made the attempt to do that. These new rule changes, I think, if they keep after it, I'm not saying it's going to work this way this year, but if they keep after it, there's no question that they can make this kickoff play better and more dangerous than it's ever been. And I think that's a gift to the game, not a compromise.
We should go through these changes. We haven't really done that yet. Let's do it now. We got time right now, right? Let's go
through it. Okay.
It was approved yesterday, and it started because the NFL had data that said that concussions were 5 times more likely to happen on kickoffs last year than any other play. So what they've done, 5 players on each side of the ball. So you can't overload a side, right? Steve, talk about that. What does that mean?
Right,
you're
just
the kicking
means,
team we're talking
when
about.
You think about a classic kickoff coverage situation where the kicker's backed off the ball and he runs up and kicks the ball, it's going to look exactly the same. You're going to have 5 guys. You're going to have 10 guys spread out even across the field. There's going to be 5 guys to the right of the kicker, 5 guys to the left of the kicker. The difference you're going to notice is that all 10 of those guys lined up all the way across the field are going to be standing down and with either a 3-point stance or a 2-point stance, and they're going to be standing still until the ball is kicked. So you're going to see the kicker approach the ball from behind them, and when he kicks it, then they take off. It's going to be like a starter's pistol in a race rather than a charging cavalry where a bunch of horses hit the line at the same time with a running start. So it's going to look like a race is being started with a kick rather than this rumbling herd running down. Then on the other side of the field, you're going to notice that there's going to be a lot fewer people way deep down the field. There's going to be 3 guys deep on the kickoff return team, and the other 8 guys are going to be up very close to where the kicking team is, or within 15 yards of them. So you're going to have a lot of guys spread out all over the field within between the 40-yard lines, or the 35 and the 40-yard line of the other team. So you're going to have most of the guys within a 20-25-yard area of the field, the coverage team and most of the guys on the return team. And then you're going to have 3 guys, probably 3 athletes, back deep to return the ball. And what this does, and it's kind of subtle, when the ball is kicked, because of the speed and because of the ability of both teams to start running and get running fast, it'll be meshed together a lot like you see when the guys are trying to cover a punt and they're trying to run through the return team to get to the punt returner. It's going to look a little bit more like that on the kick rather than, you know, guys running full speed down and you got guys sitting at the other end kind of waiting to take them on when they get down there at full speed. It'll be more of a foot race rather than this thundering herd taking off and running through the gauntlet of big, big, heavy blockers.
That foot race, the part that will look a little bit like punt coverage, that should accomplish, you would think, and we don't know this for sure, but that should accomplish what they're trying to do, right? Avoiding violent collisions, one guy going 100 miles an hour and another guy just sort of standing there.
Yeah, you've seen it, because what happens is all these concussions that you talk about on kickoff and kickoff return, most of them happen on the return team. Because what those guys do is they would retreat, and they're retreating to get in front of the return guy, the guy who catches the football, and those other guys with the running start are chasing them. So the idea was to retreat far back and then pick your guy up. But here's the thing, and you can imagine it. When the guy stops to turn around and he retreats and he stops and then starts forward again, he really doesn't have time to get any momentum. And those guys that have had the running start and the 45-yard run at him, they're like a freight train coming down the tracks. And you, as a return guy, you're trying to block that, and you don't get out of the way. Neither one of you is trying to avoid the other. So there's a big, big collision there. And that's where the concussions happened.
What to give me your thought, and you mentioned it a moment ago how it could result in more big returns. How would you see that happening? What as a result of these rules changes?
Well, here's my thought. When I was a rookie, I led the AFC for 12 weeks as a kickoff returner, and the kickoff we used was a lot like this. We would have most of our guys up, and they would retreat back, and then they would just pick them up man-to-man. It was more of a foot race, kind of a matchup thing. We didn't really have a wedge. We had a couple of guys. But then they would go up, and the matchups would be so man-to-man that they would start to hand fight, and it was all about the guys up in front of me. And they would match up, and it was all – and I've said this. I said this in the meeting in New York a few weeks ago, and the other guys, that Antoine Randall, L, sitting there next to me, he goes, yeah, you're right. He goes, it's the timing. And the timing will be such that if you're a coverage guy, here's the dilemma you're in. Do you take the blocker on, or do you run – or is the returner so far away you can run around the block and get back into your lane before the runner is there for you to tackle? And the ideal thing for the return team is – to have the guys block, and just not even a half second later, the return man gets there at full speed. Because what happens is you block, and invariably the coverage team tries to pick a side. You're going to block them away, or they're going to fight you, or they're going to make a decision about where they're going to pursue the kick returner, and the kick returner just picks his spot. Whichever two guys jump apart on the coverage team, or whichever lane gets vacated because of a block, or because of a guy trying to avoid a block, that's where he runs, because he's timed it just perfectly to do that at full speed. And that's when a return breaks. And I remember from early in my career, those were the successful returns because we had an ability to do that. This is going to set up, I think, perfectly for that timing to start to occur again when special teams coaches get that down. And that's why I think it's going to work.
What will the strategy be on kick return then? Would it be you pick left or right where the return's going, and then work on that timing? What you would have to do.
A couple of things. You can do a lot of things. You can have the entire return team, like on the right side, all you guys with everybody from the kicker to our right, you're going to push them towards one sideline. The guys with all the kicker and all those guys on the left, you're going to push all those guys to the right sideline, and the return is going to come straight up. Or you can have all you guys that are on our right side in the front, and all you guys on the left, you're going to cross. And when you cross, each of you has a specific guy you're going to cross and try and kick out and push toward the sideline. So you have guys crossing on the return team. And as they cross, they'll form a vacant gap in the coverage and kick all those guys to the sidelines. Or you can have guys on – I mean, it's limitless what you can do. But I can go on and on about what you can do on kickoff return. But there will be schemes, blocking schemes, that will be used to try and get – a gap in that coverage, either on one side or the other, or up the middle, or down one sideline, or down one the other sideline. But it's all going to be with how fast those athletes on the return game can get set up in position alongside the guys that are covering the kick and push them the way they want to be pushed.
Last thing, and in this segment, we'll talk more about.
I hope I'm making this clear.
Yeah,
I'm starting to go deep. You know, I mean.
What type of players will, both from a kick coverage and from a kick return, who are you looking at? What kind of athletes do you want out there?
This was a big concern
now, with the new rules.
For the players' union. This was a big concern because it used to be when you see the wedge, and when we say wedge, for those people who don't know what that is, those big guys, the guy would catch the kick return, and you'd have like four guys grouped ahead of him, shoulder to shoulder, right, and it looked like four horses, chariots, and they'd start forward. And it's just like a Roman chariot. You crushed everything in your path, and you blocked everything out of the way. That's illegal now. Can't even have two guys shoulder to shoulder to do that.
Can you not even double team blocks anymore?
No, I don't think so. No. And anyway, you can have a guy engage and have a second guy come in late, but you can't do it together.
Set up two like that.
So, so here's the thing. So that and as a result of that. In these meetings, it's obvious that you're going to have guys that can really run. And offensive linemen notoriously can't keep up in that regard. They can't cover. They can keep up for short distances when they're pulling around or getting up to the second level for short 10-yard bursts. But when you start striding out and going 45 yards on it, they can't keep up with that, especially with a defensive back, a wide receiver, even some linebackers, tight ends, running backs. Those guys are generally faster. So that takes all those big, heavy offensive linemen off of that special teams and their ability to play it. That's a concern for the union and for the roster makeup. If you got an extra offensive lineman for special teams, where's he going to play? Punt team? That's just as bad. He can't keep up. He may be able to protect, but he can't get down there to cover the punt.
Yeah.
So it's going to force teams to formulate their roster with more DBs, more wide receivers,
linebackers,
running backs, and tight ends, more athletes. And so that's going to be a difference maker. It's going to be the guys on the kick return team and the coverage team are going to be athletes who can really run. Now, if they're big and they can run, they can certainly cover kicks.
Well, there's a lot there. We're going to talk more about this in the third and final hour of the show. The league today approved a change in its policy for pregame anthems and pregame demonstrations. We'll talk about that in the third and final hour of the show. Also, some news on Richie Incognito, which is not encouraging. We'll get to that when we come back. We're going to take a break here for the top of the hour. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Speaking of space fillers, we're here with the Sports Update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Steve Tasker. OTAs day two is over. The Buffalo Bills have made their way up the field. They'll be back out there tomorrow. Tomorrow's an open session for the media. We should get a chance to hear from head coach Sean McDermott and some of the top players as they go on and come off the field tomorrow. 3 days of OTAs this week, two more weeks of OTAs, and then the mandatory minicamp coming up in mid-June. At the NFL owners' meetings down south in Atlanta, some movement today. The 32 clubs of the NFL today passed a new policy statement on pregame protests involving the anthem. The league says that all team and league personnel on the field should stand and show respect for the flag and the anthem, but personnel, including players who choose not to stand for the anthem, may stay in the locker room or in a similar location off the field until the anthem has been performed. There are fines also. No penalty yardage or anything, but fines for those who violate that policy. Late yesterday, owners gave temporary approval for a change to the kickoff rule. We talked about that at length here on the show. They also formally approved an expansion of replay review to include all ejections from the game. Future Super Bowl sites, Arizona and New Orleans, have been added to the rotation. So the next four Super Bowls now are set to be played in Atlanta, Miami, Tampa Bay, and Los Angeles, and then Phoenix and New Orleans, the new additions. Tom Brady will attend the mandatory minicamp for the New England Patriots. That's according to Patriots owner Bob Kraft. He made that announcement at the owners' meeting today. Christian Hackenberg traded yesterday from the New York Jets to the Oakland Raiders in exchange for a conditional seventh-round pick next year. Hackenberg has spent the offseason starting from scratch on his throwing motion. He'll get a chance to test it out now with the Oakland Raiders. Hockey news, San Jose Sharks closing in on a 7-year contract with Evander Kane that'll keep him off the free agent market. That deal means the Buffalo Sabres get a first-round pick instead of a second-rounder next year once he re-signs with San Jose. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, working into our third and final hour of the show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, ready to talk with you about a variety of topics, including the anthem, I guess. They've kind of settled on their proposal this year. We can talk about the rules changes. Want to know from you, too, about the Bills. We always like to keep it focused on the Bills, too. And which addition to the Buffalo roster you think will have the biggest impact this year, 2018? Give us a call. Let us know, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or do it on Twitter.
You know, you talk about the anthem protests and what has happened to them, how big an issue it's become. And now I think with this policy, I think we've heard also from the union, the players union, they're, if it's not consistent, because they're about the players' rights and, you know, and all their rights to do it. And the last part of their statement this morning, the union is going to review this policy and challenge any aspect of it that is inconsistent with the collective bargaining agreement. So there's no question that the league did this on their own. They didn't like ask the union or permission or anything like that. So it's not going to go away. The league would like to put the protests out of sight, in the locker room, but it'll be, you know, guys will be protesting in their absence by not being on the field. So it's not going to go away soon, but there's no question that the league is, you know, I think continuing to struggle with it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I think about it. I'm glad they took the – there was talk that they would make it a 15-yard penalty. Come on.
Yeah.
You don't want to get involved in game-playing situations with this. This is a pregame issue and should remain in the pregame. There was also talk that they would let each club form its own policy. I'm glad that's been taken out of it, right? I mean, there should be a league-wide standard. You don't want some NFL cities doing it one way and others doing it another way and people choosing sides that way. I can't imagine. I guess it doesn't take heart much to imagine, but whatever objection the NFL Players Association might have, you know, have at it, guys, you know, if that's important to you. You know what I mean? I can't imagine what it would be. I guess if you're talking about fining players or disciplining players, the union, the NFLPA says, well, wait a minute, you can't do that without our input. Okay, I get that. I'll tell you what, Steve, you're a former player. I used to talk about this with Donald all the time, another former player. I would feel totally unrepresented by my union if I were an NFL player because they seem to focus on stuff that really doesn't matter. In the meantime, there are health issues. There are money issues that never really get addressed, and the NFLPA just kind of gloms on to stuff that means nothing, really. Doesn't really amount
to much. I agree. There's no question. I mean, everybody has, you know, this form of protest and how it's brought a lot of things to the table, but there's no question it touched a nerve because the way they protested and kneeling for the anthem really, really angered a large segment of people in our country, no question about it. And the message in that, in that passion and then in that disgust and anger or whatever it touched off, the message got lost. Like that's the unfortunate part about the whole thing. And you find even veterans, some veterans say, you know, I get it. I fought for their right to do that. And then other veterans say, I'm insulted by it. So what a murky issue it is. And the leagues put this policy in place. And now the NFLPA is going to examine it to see if it's legal and we move on.
We will move on. We move to this, and this is a disturbing story. It just came out this afternoon while we've been on the air, and it deals with former Bills guard Richie Incognito. This is an incident in Florida. We have a report here from TMZ Sports, which...
they specialize in this kind of story.
they do, but they usually, you know, do a decent job of getting it right. Rich, here's the deal from TMZ Sports. Richie Incognito reportedly involved in an altercation with another man at a gym in Florida, described as an upscale gym. The alleged victim claims Incognito threw a dumbbell at him, and cops were called. He was working out. It happened early today. He got into it with a guy who was working out. TMZ says the alleged victim says Incognito threw a tennis ball at him first for no reason and then grabbed a dumbbell and threw that as well. Multiple gym sources say Incognito was taken away by police. The latest report says Incognito was put in an involuntary psychiatric hold to be evaluated. Not an arrest, but an evaluation, a mental evaluation. It's unfortunate. I hate to read that. I like Richie. I liked his tenure here. Got to know him a little bit. He was a frequent guest on the show, and I think he brought something to the. I just hate to hear the Richie struggling with this kind of issue again. And this sounds like kind of nothing. Well, he threw a dumbbell, didn't hit anybody. Apparently,
he was out of football because he had some demons to deal with, and the altercation he had with Jonathan Martin way back in Miami years ago, and then he came to Buffalo and got a second chance at it and seemed to make the most of it. And of course, being at the age he is now, you knew the end was closer than the beginning was, and you never know how it was going to happen. It looked like it had run its course here in Buffalo. He had decided to retire because he was having some health issues, and then apparently did not want to let those health issues get in his way. So the Buffalo Bills gave him his release after they had moved on from him after he'd retired. And then he wanted to come back. So they said, well, you can pursue your career further. And then a day or two after that, we have this incident come out. It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And you don't know how it's going to play out. Nobody wishes bad on anybody. But it happened so quickly after all of this had come to light about his retirement and then his unretirement and his release by the Buffalo Bills. We thought it would be relevant to talk about.
Today's issue, I think it sheds a light on why, you know, people wonder why would the Bills release Richie Incognito, cut him loose a couple days ago. Today's issue is one of the reasons why, right? That unpredictable nature. That's what you get with Richie Incognito.
I think the culture that Sean McDermott installed here last year, and certainly he didn't have any problems under the Rex Ryan regime either, but certainly the culture here was helping him. I think the help being on in this organization kept him on the straight and narrow. Certainly, as soon as he was out of the fold, he got into trouble pretty quickly, and that's the disturbing thing about the entire thing. You don't know if he had remained in the NFL and not retired, that he wouldn't be in this fix right now. Certainly, wouldn't be in Florida. He'd be here.
Yep. Let's wish him well. Anyway, hey, We're talking about which newcomer, Bill's addition to the roster, will have the biggest impact. Got a couple of calls on this, a couple of tweets on this. Let's take a call first from John in Phoenix, Arizona. John, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. So I'm really excited about the new team this year. I actually think our defense is going to be a lot better. I mean, the offense got a lot of questions. But in terms of the most impact, I think it's Star Lotulelei. Because I remember Ted Washington back in the day, man, that guy took up a lot of space. And our defense was so stellar with him in the middle. And I think Star is going to have a similar effect. I think Edmonds is going to benefit. All of our linebackers will benefit. And our pass rush will benefit. I'm really excited about it. I do think that A.J. McCarron is going to have an impact as the quarterback. Also, you know, that's a really important position, obviously. Everything goes through him. So he's very important. And even if he doesn't end up starting, he sets the bar that the other guys are going to have to rise above. So he has an impact in his own way. But Star, to me, on the field, that's the biggest impact. And one other thing.
Yep.
I love our Buffalo Bills uniforms, but everyone in our division has white helmets or silver helmets, and I really feel like we should bring back the old red helmet and do red pants. I use it in Madden, and it looks so sweet.
All right.
Thank you.
I like it, John. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, he brings up an interesting topic, and I said on the website, we answered a bunch of questions. I thought Star Lotulelei could be a real difference maker for the defense. Even if he didn't get a bunch of sacks or make a lot of tackles, he was going to be like a Ted Washington. Ted Washington played on so many teams where they were the number one defensive run defense in the league because of a guy in the middle. And I think Star Lotulelei could be that type of guy for the Buffalo Bills. I agree with him as a difference maker. The other thing he said that is really intriguing, and I hadn't thought about it in this light, is A.J. McCarron. And he said something really insightful, I thought. A.J. sets the bar for how good the Bills quarterback has to play in camp to be the starter on opening day. A.J. McCarron's the bar. Am I right? Is he right?
Let me think.
Because, listen, if A.J. McCarron stinks, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's the guy who's the steady influence, the dependable. He's the bar.
I'm not disagreeing, but why him?
He's the veteran who sets the bar. Now,
Josh Allen,
whoever
or
plays
why him
best,
and not
whoever
Peterman?
Plays best. Well, I think you're comparing both those guys to A.J. McCarron to begin with. Am I right? I mean, that's the way I kind
what
of
if
mentally
Josh Allen,
did it.
What if
I guess the coaches are in? You know, they're not doing that. But
right.
Don't you kind of find yourself saying that? Well, listen, if A.J. plays well, he's the guy.
Maybe there's a bar that Josh Allen can set that no one can come close to. The other two can't come close to. I guess. That's what
Certainly.
I was talking about earlier when I said there's a chance. I don't know if it's likely, but chance Josh Allen could leave camp as the starter.
Let's face it, Josh Allen could play lights out, but if he doesn't play as well as A.J. McCarron, who's also playing lights out, who starts?
That'd be a tough call. I hope we have that
right?
opportunity.
Right.
Yeah.
See, that's
I hope
the
we
point.
Get a chance
I,
to think about
and
that.
And I think that's an interesting way to look at it because for – Josh Allen.
Look, it's not
AJ McCarron's the bar you got to unless you
are you
know,
saying
Nate
that AJ McCarron?
Well. I don't want to count Nathan Peterman because we always get
no, I know.
Somebody calls and say, "Hey."
But are you saying that it's McCarron's job to lose? Is that what you're trying to say here? Because I don't know if I believe that.
No, but I'll say this: AJ McCarron's the guy Josh Allen's got to play better than.
Yes. Yeah.
And AJ's got to play better than Josh Allen.
Yeah.
But I think you know that here. Well, I guess here to say it this way. You know Josh Allen, some point in the future, whether it's this year, next year, the year after, whatever, he's going to get an opportunity to play quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. If Josh Allen outplays A.J. McCarron in this training camp, A.J. McCarron may never get that same opportunity.
I agree. A call here on our question, off-season edition, I have the biggest impact. Jerry in Webster, New York. Go ahead, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Hi, Steve. How you guys doing?
Okay.
Doing great.
Listen, I want to do a shout out to Don Jones, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right, man. I got to like the guy after watching almost a year. The other thing I just want to say, I think Edmonds is going to be the biggest impact. And I got to tell you guys, I'm excited about preseason.
Yeah.
Why? Tell me why, Jerry.
Well, because you got three quarterbacks going to be battling for starting position. You got these new rules change that are going into effect. As far as the national anthem thing, I'm a veteran. I served during the Vietnam era. And, you know, I think this protest stuff, you know, I think people are making a big deal about it. You know, I think people should be allowed to do what they want to do. And that's why I That's why I was in the military.
Okay. Oh, thanks, Jerry.
That's interesting coming from a guy who served.
Yeah, your point, I always get excited. I mean, I'm a sucker. I always get excited for preseason because the issues like you just described, there are going to be roster battles. There's the unveiling of a new quarterback, first round pick, seventh pick overall. Rules changes don't get me too excited, but I'm in now the kickoff rule. I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of like you. Listen, there are days when we come in here in May and we're begging for the preseason because you know, it's hard. You know, it's just not that much going on. We're talking about a bunch of rich owners in Atlanta having meetings and rubber stamping. Yeah, okay, you get the Carolina Panthers. Congratulations, you're an NFL owner. That's a yawner, man.
It's a
snooze fest. Yeah. So the rules changes, I'm excited about. I want to see what those look like. I'm intrigued. I'm excited about the kickoff rule changes for obvious reasons, like everybody else is. I want to see what it looks like. I'm kind of interested to see how this helmet thing is going to turn out, whether they're going to start ejecting guys. I think ejection is the ultimate form of penalty, and I think it is the one penalty and the one consequence that will make players adapt immediately. You know, you can say, I'm going to call it like this, and I want to see you call it. When they start ejecting guys for that helmet-to-helmet hit or for leading with their head, you will see guys – that's when you're really going to see guys change. I think that's a conversation that will happen immediately.
We're going to have an over and under. How many ejections under that rule?
In this whole year?
No, that's a little preseason. I bet there's 0 to 1.
Do you think – that they're going to, like, say, okay, we want a half a dozen ejections in the preseason to make
let
sure
them know.
Let them know.
Right?
Nah, it's an NHL thing.
You're right.
That's
no,
NHL
the NFL
thing.
Does it too. You've seen it.
Come
the NFL
on.
Will call penalties.
Well, it's because
we've,
a
got,
point
a,
of
we've
emphasis.
Got a new point of emphasis on this, and you'll get the call in the preseason, and then it sort of goes away. Right? When
yeah, but
playing.
It never goes away. They'll make it a point of emphasis, but guys will change, and they'll call it, though. The NFL is not the NHL.
Oh, yeah, I know that. Yeah. On Twitter, our question of the day, which offseason addition will have the biggest impact in 2018? A tweet from Timothy. I'll say the new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. Last year's offense was dull and predictable, and that was with an athletic quarterback. Good coaching puts players in a position to succeed. Look at Philadelphia's offense last year with a backup quarterback. They were good before the backup got in there last year, by the way. They were really good. But, yeah, no question, good coaching is key. And Daboll might be the most significant offseason addition, biggest impact. Hopefully it's for more than a year, but we're talking about 2018.
That's my vote. I mean, I've said it, you know, we've been talking about it for a long time. I said it when Todd McVay got the – Sean McVay got the head coaching job in Los Angeles and hired Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator. I said that was the biggest free agent acquisition of the entire offseason, and it turned out – to be pretty close to being right. Wade Phillips was really good, and that offense, they benefited from having Wade there. And it's the same with all – I like Jim Schwartz, coordinated here in Buffalo for a year, was phenomenal. They had a top-five defense. Went to Philadelphia, won a world championship with Philadelphia. That guy can really coach defenses. So I agree. I mean, offensive and defensive coordinators are the guys in the offseason to watch how they move and where they go.
Tweet from Todd Shearer. Who's the biggest offseason impact with the biggest impact this year? Todd Shearer says, the starting receiver that's not currently on the team, maybe Dez Bryant. Maybe. I don't know, you know, that there's a difference-making receiver that they're going to get. I wouldn't look for Dez Bryant to wind up on this roster.
Let me just allude to another big issue in the NFL with the state's gambling. Don't bet on Dez Bryant being a Buffalo Bill. If you can get a prop bet, don't take it, no matter what the odds are.
A tweet from Josh S. says, I selected Josh Allen. Even if he does not get the start, he will drive the quarterback competition, which will bring the best out of Nate or AJ. Because of this, it will give the team the best chance to succeed and vastly improve the offense. We kind of touched on this, I guess it was last half hour. Look, I don't think either any of those three need motivation. I don't think anybody needs to drive A.J. McCarron into having a good off-season OTAs or minicamp. This is his career on the line right now. This is his defining moment, right? Mm-hmm. This is his chance, best chance he'll probably ever get to be a starter. He doesn't need to be told that. He knows that. He doesn't need Josh Allen to drive him or push him to play better. He really doesn't.
That's right, and it's another one about it. I think A.J. McCarron could be a pretty good player and a big surprise for many of us, including me, and I hope so. And that's the big question. That's why the caller and you and I are excited for the preseason. I want to see A.J. McCarron and Josh Allen battle it out, and I want to see both of them play phenomenal. And I want to see – in fact, I want to see A.J. McCarron play so good we trade him for a number one pick. When you know, when the, I mean, that's I mean, I want both those guys to be so good that teams are banging the door down, offering their entire draft class for one of those guys. That's how good I want to, you know, let's face it, that's what we want. We want everybody to play as good as they can play, no matter what spot they have on the roster. I want it to be impossible for the coaches to make a decision because they're both playing so good.
You bring up an issue which I guess could happen here with the Bills, which is a little bit reminiscent of the Eagles last year. And I want to read this. Did you see this? Michael Silver, NFL.com. Right before the start of the league year, he reports, the Eagles turned down a potential trade that would have sent Nick Foles of the Cleveland Browns for a first-round pick, 35th overall in the draft, according to three sources familiar with the talks. Before rejecting the deal, two sources said the Eagles ran the scenario, the trade scenario, by Foles. Hey, would you like to go to Cleveland? He said he preferred to remain in Philadelphia. And so the Eagles and Foles redid a deal, gave him $2 million bonus for 2018, and there's some incentives there. Meantime, the Browns, having been rebuffed by the Eagles in their attempt to get Nick Foles, turn their attention to Tyrod Taylor, who they got for a third-round pick on March 10th. Very interesting story. Nick Foles was the target, it appears, from the Cleveland Browns.
And that's not a surprise.
No.
Everybody wanted Nick Foles.
Right. Well,
everybody, our callers wanted Nick Foles.
Yeah, you're right.
Minnesota wanted Nick Foles. Denver wanted Nick Foles. Arizona wanted Nick Foles. All these teams that took a quarter. The Jets.
I wonder, though,
the Redskins,
how many approach the Eagles, and I wonder how many teams Foles might have turned down. This is something against
apparently
the Browns.
All of them.
Well, I don't know. Did he get the authority? How many teams approached him with legitimate offers, the Eagles? And then how many times did the Eagles go to Foles and say, hey, what about this team? What about that team? And did he say no? He said no to a trade to the Browns. Is he going
to
the Browns?
Did he say no to a trade to the Bills?
I don't know.
Did he say no to the Redskins? All that stuff. So
I wonder.
And so it doesn't surprise me, getting back to the point, it doesn't surprise me that the Browns were interested in Nick Foles. It surprised me a little bit that Nick Foles didn't want to go to Cleveland and be the starter.
That surprised me a little bit.
But I do know this, that Nick Foles had played, got drafted by Philly, left, and came back and was excited to come back. They've got a... In Philadelphia, they've got a lot of the good vibes coming out of their locker room that the Buffalo Bills had this year with that culture change. It's a very feel-good, very together, very we're for each other.
They got a Lombardi trophy in the lobby now.
And they got a nice little Lombardi trophy. Plus, so, you know, Nick Foles is probably saying, you know what, I've played for a while. They gave me a $2 million bonus to stay. Let's go. I mean, I'm good. Why would he want to leave?
To start.
Well, that's it.
Now, the part of it, too, might be he knows – I go to the Browns. They're going to draft a first-rounder. They're going to draft, he might probably thought Baker Mayfield maybe. Why would I go there and have a first-rounder looking over my shoulder early on and maybe even taking the job right out of the box? So that could have been part of his consideration also.
Yeah. And
it's an interesting story.
It is.
Michael Silver said you got three sources.
Boils down to is that Tyrod Taylor was not Cleveland's first choice.
Yeah.
And that is, and getting Tyrod Taylor for a third-round pick – and not being their first choice means, Tyrod Taylor is, if you didn't know it, he's expendable at the expense of Baker Mayfield. I don't know what it says about the Browns or how Tyrod Taylor would take that news or that story other than the fact that he probably, we know Tyrod Taylor, what kind of guy, he's probably saying, I guess everybody wanted Nick Foles before they wanted me.
I think Tyrod likes that sort of...
He wear it as a chip on his shoulder
exactly.
and use it
as
fuel for
that.
The fire.
Yeah.
I don't think he has a problem with it. Let's face it. I mean, what do you think Tyrod Taylor's mentions are in his Twitter account when he, oh, my gosh.
What do you mean?
After throwing for 56 yards against the New Orleans Saints, you don't think people were absolutely vilifying him?
I don't think he's on
He might not. Well, he might
but
not be.
Twitter aside, Tyrod, I think, is accustomed to being overlooked and to being shortchanged a little bit, and I think it drives him a little bit, too.
Take place. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that had a bad word to say about Tyrod Taylor as a human being. The guys on this team loved him. They played hard for him. He was a leader. He worked hard at it. They saw him. He set the bar for the effort that he put forth. And Cleveland knows what they're getting. He is a guy that got the Buffalo Bills to the playoffs as starting quarterback after a 17-year drought. And did a handful of things every game that no other quarterback in the league could do. Now, there's stuff that goes along with it. There's a lot of things that every quarterback in the league did that Tyrod wouldn't. But by the same token, he was a guy that his teammates loved and loved playing for and loved playing with. And you know, I think a lot of Buffalo Bills fans and, of course, the guys in this room, they wish him nothing but the best.
Sure, I feel that way.
Yeah, and the fact that now all of a sudden it comes out that maybe the Cleveland Browns wanted Nick Foles instead of Tyrod Taylor, that's water off a duck's back.
A break here. We're back with more. Give us a call. We got lines open to talk about any of these issues, the rules changes, the kickoff changes. We can talk about the Bills move and the offseason and which one of those offseason additions will have the biggest impact this year. Phone lines open, 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, toll-free at 1-888-552-550. Steve Tasker, John Murphy, One Bills Live on Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to the show, One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Yeah, we talk during the breaks. We do. We talk about interesting stuff.
Yes, we do.
It's a nice day here in Orchard Park, and the Bills have finished up their work day. They worked outside today. I think tomorrow the weather's going to be good too, Steve. And we'll get a chance to watch a little more practice tomorrow.
The practice will be open. So anybody who has all their favorite outlets, all their outlets will be there kind of watching practice and seeing what's going on. It'll be, of course, they won't see any of it. Anything competitive, keep that all under wraps.
But if they see, like, Josh Allen miss a pass, that'll be tweeted out all over
the
country.
It'll be a tragedy. It'll be a complete bust.
We're 0-1 in May.
That's
right. Could there be anything?
That's right. He's a complete waste of a draft pick, and it's like because he overthrew one guy.
Who's going to have the biggest impact in 2018 for the Bills? Give us a call. Send us a tweet. Got a Twitter poll going on it. Let's take a call from Jonathan and Alden. Jonathan, long time. We haven't heard from you. How are you doing, all right?
I've been doing good, John. I've been kind of busy, but thanks for having the show again. But, yeah, I think the player with the biggest impact is going to be Josh Allen because, I mean, I know you said 2018, but I think he'll have the biggest impact for both this year and the future because if he does pan out, he's going to be – if he does pan out, if he becomes the next elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, he's going to set up the franchise up for success for 20 years, and 10, 20 years. And secondly, I want to say I really like the new kickoff rules. I think they – I really like the new kickoff rules, and they I really want to see more kickoff returns for touchdowns. I think they'll definitely swing the game and add some more excitement to the game. And I do hope it reduces concussions, so I really like these new kickoff rules.
Thanks. Thank you, Jonathan and Alden. You know what we didn't talk about, and Dean Blandino
Jonathan
did.
Jonathan sounded like me with my first cup of coffee there. Boy, he had a lot in there. I like you. That's the first time I've heard from you. You said he calls all the time,
He does.
Is he a regular? All right, cool. Yeah. I got to listen for that.
High energy.
Yeah, I like it.
Blandino mentioned this, and I think he got me thinking about the new policy on the new rules on ejections. He thinks because I guess I'm a victim of when it first came out, we're all like, what? You can't throw players out that for incidental contact with the helmet. The deal is it's not going to be incidental, and they're going to review a replay review, which even though I'm not in favor of replay review, they have to go to review before they eject. And Blandino said it's really going to be a positive rule. You heard him say that, right? He said
I agree.
The expansion of replay to include all injections, the league, it's like the second part of the rule they passed back in March to penalize and possibly eject players for lowering their helmets to initiate contact against an opponent. I guess, Steve, I'm trusting officials to get this right. You know what I mean? I'm trusting them not to do too much. First of all, not to have too many ejections, but not even,
right.
You know, there's incidental contact and players do lower their helmet. You asked him about offensive players. You know, Tom Brady, it's 4th and 1, 4th and a half yard. Tom Brady will lower his helmet and do a quarterback sneak.
Yeah.
And maybe make contact with another helmet at that point. Right. Does he get penalized instead of getting the first down?
That's interesting, but I think it's more about the defenders. And certainly we've all seen where guys line it up and you have an unobstructed path to the ball carrier to deliver a blow, and you align your head and you hit him with the crown of your helmet and all of that. And I think that's one of the things they're trying to get away from. Plus the guys that I mentioned when Dean Blandino was on about the guys that are held up and the second guy coming in and trying to really light him up and punish him. All that stuff. And obviously if it bespeaks of malicious intent, that's an ejection. So I think that's the kind of thing they're looking at right off the bat. A lot of the instructionary videos that they sent out with this announcement have to do with the second guy in on a tackle, lining the guy up and just coming in to clean up and really getting a free shot. That's going to go away probably. And I think they're going to draw a distinction between ducking your head and lowering it for protection of yourself, like to flinch or brace for contact, rather than using it as a weapon or that kind of thing. Now, that speaks down to, and we saw a couple of videos here for those people watching on MSG.
And you can watch those videos, too, online.
Right. People should know that. Guys trying to get the first down. You're there, and you got to get that extra half a yard, and both players kind of go in head first. That's going to be a problem, I think. That's going to be the area where, listen, you got to let the guy try and make the attempt for the first down, but you also got to let the guy defend against it. And to go in there with your chest first instead of your head first is going to be hard to make that happen. Conversely, it's second nature for people to try and dive across head first to get the extra half yard. And if you dive head first, trying to get, and I guess there's a difference there as I say that. Maybe it's when you're trying to get the extra yard, it's one thing. When you're trying to knock the guy out of the way to get the first down, it's another. That's the gray area for me that has yet to be, you know, illustrated and for me to understand it. Hopefully this preseason and during the regular season we'll get it ironed out.
I hope it works because I do agree. I do agree they need to get those really bad head hits out of the way. When the rule was first approved in March, though, I think you were here, Leonard or Lorenzo Alexander and others said, hey, wait, this is
– what do we do?
What are we supposed to hit?
How do you play defense?
Yeah.
And I get it. I mean, that's – because it came out, it was very strongly worded. And it was you know, if you strap your helmet on, you're ejected kind of thing. I mean, it was like, what? Wait a minute. So it was really players were really doing double takes and rereading the rule, and it was very strongly worded. Now they since backed off from that, saying, listen, it's got to be a couple of indicators that have to be set up for it before right. anybody's going to get ejected. But I hope they do eject guys. I don't have a problem with them making the game safe. I don't think it's not going to deter. Yeah, certainly there's going to be that element that says, you're going to get on, you know, you guys, not like it was when I played. It's a soft league and they're not playing like men anymore. Well, okay. You know what, though? It's still going to be a pretty good game. And I think it's going to be just fine.
We've talked a lot about rules changes over the last couple of weeks here on the show. There was a point a couple of years ago, Steve, when I thought one of the problems with the NFL, and I don't think this anymore, but I thought one of the problems is the rules change every year. Every year officials have to re-educate themselves. Fans have to re-educate themselves. You, I think, have the exact opposite opinion. You think that's a strength of the league, right, that they change year to year?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I'm not sure if I'm there yet, but tell me why you believe that.
Well, here's the thing. The game needs to evolve, and it's not – the game is fine. I mean – it's fun. It's fun to watch. It's a phenomenal sport for people to play. I loved it. I let all my boys play it. And I know a lot of people have a different view of that, and I respect that as well. You don't have to do that. But here's my thought. The reason that the NFL is so successful is because – not because they feel their game is sacred. The NFL is successful because the league understands it's fan interest that is sacred. They do what they need to do to make their game as attractive as they possibly can to the general public that consumes it. And people wanted more scoring. So now you've got games that are routinely in the 30s. You've got the passing game is opened up because they want to see these guys throw it, and they want to see acrobatic catches. They want to see that kind of game move. They want to see it. They don't want to see a two-yard short yardage play off left tackle. You know, they want to see the ball in the air. So they gave them. They've liberalized the pass interference rules. They've liberalized the receivers getting downfield untouched. They've liberalized the pass protection rules. They've protected the quarterbacks to make sure that the star players are always on the field or as much as they possibly can. They do all these things to make the game, to have the game give fans what they ask for and what more of what they want. And they change the rules also to give them less of what they don't want. They don't want concussions. They don't want cheap guys getting hurt on plays that don't count. They don't want a guy having to leave the field on a touchback on a kickoff. They don't want to see things they don't like. And so the league structures and changes their game constantly to give them that. And it is a much different game than it was when I came into the league in 1985, and it'll continue to be different. And that doesn't mean it's worse or better or anything. What it means is it's more of what the fans want and less of what they don't.
I got thinking about that the other day in your position on that. It might have been last night. I was waiting, maybe it was two nights ago, waiting for the basketball game to start. Yeah, two nights ago. NFL Films had a film on about Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus. And they showed some of Dick Butkus' hits.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, penalty today, penalty today. That's a penalty now. I mean, and believe me, I remember Dick Butkus. I remember watching him, enjoying watching him play.
Legendary.
He was fearful. I mean, he was fearful. He would instill fear in opponents. I recall listening to O.J. Simpson talk about that. And he was effective, right? He's a Hall of Famer. But the stuff
the
he did.
All-time great players in the history of the league.
The stuff he did 40 years ago would not fly. It would not fly now. He couldn't play like that now. It's a totally different game.
I told you, the NFL films, they don't show them very much anymore.
That's right.
Because of the climate of our culture.
Yeah.
But
I'm talking back, late hits, helmet hits.
Oh, spearing.
Wrestling people to the ground, spearing, late hits.
Face
crazy.
Masks.
And it was all legal then.
And it wasn't, even if it wasn't legal, it wasn't an ejection or anything.
Right.
It was like, ah, it's a face mask, whatever. It's just a regular penalty. But you had games, and I said this a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about this. You go back and look at Raiders-Chiefs games from the 70s, 60s and 70s, when Otis Taylor and Lynn Dawson were there and Ben Davidson and all those Raiders guys were there. This is pre-Lyle Alzado.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is back in the before even maybe Kenny Stabler. This is back in the Daryl LaMonica days of the Oakland Raiders. Man, they were bar fights. I mean, it was just renegade. So, you know.
And it was popular, by the way.
Listen, you can make there's people who always make the argument, that's why the game is great, because of those guys. And on all those bar fight games and the struggles and the bench-clearing brawls and the penalties and the bloody noses and the no face mask and the cheap shots, that's why the game is great. Well, I get it. But I think most fans, I think the general population is so much more educated as to all the things that football could be. They're willing to sacrifice all of that stuff and get into the more science and the elevated level of thought that goes into these game plans and the players and their careers.
Hey, how about a little NFL true and false? Are you ready for that? NFL true and false.
I am
brought
ready.
To you by
I've been preparing.
Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. A couple of issues we have talked about today in NFL true and false. Steve has said it. Ross Tucker agrees. Ross Tucker tweeted this out earlier today. Seems to me like the new kickoff rules, especially no running start for the kicking team, will lead to more returns, which I don't think was their goal. New kickoff rules lead to more returns. True, false? I think I know how you're going to answer.
It is true. And I do think I agree with Ross, a former teammate of mine. It wasn't the goal, but I think it's a consequence they're going to be willing to live with in order to save that play and make it safer. And I think they've got a big vested interest in making the game safer so that, you know, moms and dads don't have a problem letting their kids play, letting their kids get out and take part in it. The league has a real affiliation and affection for the young people who want to play their sport, and they want to do everything they can to make it palatable for their parents and safe for those kids to come out and reap all the benefits that they can get from being on a football team. So I say that is true.
I'll say true, I guess. I'd like to see. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah.
I wish we could have true, false, or how the heck do I know? Because I would say I don't know. I don't know if it'll be more returns. I really don't. I hope so. Could be fun. Yeah, I'll say true. I'll go true on that.
Way to be convicted. There,
I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be more returns. I hope so.
Way to sell the answer there.
Part two, NFL true or false. And we talked about this just a moment ago. The assertion made by some that the Browns would have been better off with Nick Foles than Tyrod Taylor at quarterback. True, false? I'll say false. I think Tyrod's going to put up have a good showing there in Cleveland, and I think they're going to like what they get from him until they don't, and then they'll be ready to put the rookie in. So I'll say false to this.
I'll say true, because I think Nick Foles will be a better alternative to Baker Mayfield. I think you get two quarterbacks that are a little bit more the same. Not that Baker Mayfield isn't a little bit like Tyrod Taylor in his ability to get outside and create and throw the ball. But I think Nick Foles would have given the franchise a larger level of credibility ever just coming off a Super Bowl win. The Browns would have Nick Foles, a Super Bowl winning quarterback, fresh off that win in the organization, plus the first pick of the draft, allowing them to pick Baker Mayfield again, and they would be able to say, listen, for the next 5 years, it's going to be one of these two guys, work set, and for the first time in 25 years of the Browns since 1997, or however long that is, 21 years, the Browns are set at quarterback with a franchise guy, whichever one it happens to be. We don't have to go through another list on the 25 guys who have been the Browns quarterback since we came back in the league. So I would say I think it would be true if they'd be better off with Nick Foles because of the credibility he would lend to the organization.
Finally, NFL true or false. This came as in an article from a New Jersey paper about the Jets. They claim that Sam Darnold, first-round draft pick of the Jets, is the luckiest rookie in the NFL. Why? Because of
Josh McCown.
Yeah. They said not only is McCown prepared to groom his eventual replacement, he sounds excited to do so. The best thing I can do for this team is to go play good football and along the way help Sam and pass on my knowledge, McCown said. That's not Ben Roethlisberger, by the way. That's Josh McCown.
That's just what I was going to say. You know, that, and the guys who wrote that article in New York threw some shade at Ben Roethlisberger about the way he handled the Baker Mayfield signing. And for me, I guess I'll just go ahead.
Yeah, go.
I think that's true. Josh McCown is a great teammate. He's been a great quarterback, a very serviceable, great teammate, good quarterback. He started for that team last year. He's a phenomenal mentor, tutor, because he has made it clear, Josh McCown, he wants to be an NFL coach when he's done with his career. And Sam Darnold is in a perfect spot to reap the benefits of having a guy with that mentality mentor him as a rookie quarterback. It's not going to be easy in New York. And Josh McCown really takes a couple of layers of difficulty off of that stack for Sam Darnold. So I say it's true.
I'd say false, and I agree with most of what you say. I just think it's overblown how much impact a mentor quarterback could have to anybody. And Darnold's lucky, yes. McCown's a good player and a good teammate. I get all that. But really, Darnold, his future will be decided by him, his play, not anything McCown does for him. I really believe that. All right, NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. And we're back with more in a moment. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. What have we learned from today's show presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security? The preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had a good show today. Dean Blandino joined us, the former vice president of officiating for the NFL. Still involved in officiating concepts with NFL on Fox and in college football. There are changes in the rules, including one made back in March to the catch rule. And Dean Blandino talked to us about that.
I think this new rule basically... There were a handful of plays that people thought should have been catches, and under the rule were not. So what the committee did was they said, okay, let's make these plays catches. And I think what we're going to see, or we're going to have to wait and see, is did that change? Is that going to impact the rule in another way? Because there is still subjectivity to it. You know, did he perform an act common to the game, or did he have time to perform an act common to the game? That's going to be subjective, and the officials on the field are going to have to make that call in real time, and it's going to have to be administered consistently in replay. So we'll see.
We will see. No question about that. Also on the show today, we had Bills undrafted rookie free agent offensive tackle from Arizona. Ha-ha, DeBeer. That wasn't even close. He told us how to pronounce his first name. It's spelled like Gerhard, but he doesn't say it like that. At any rate, Jerry DeBeer talked to us about being signed as an undrafted free agent with the Bills a couple of weeks ago.
I was fine. I was prepared to sign as a free agent. Now, the draft was still stressful, and watching all these guys that I played with and played against and that kind of thing, watching them go, it's something that you can really add to your list of things to accomplish. I mean, there's 256 people that go every year, so to be part of that is a tremendous, tremendous honor, you know. And so I would lie if I say I wasn't disappointed.
Sure.
But still, regardless, I knew I was going to get an opportunity. And for me, it's not about necessarily what you got, but what you make of it. So for me, I came as a walk-on to Arizona. I ended up starting a bunch of games there. So for me, I'm a free agent here. I'm an underdog, and I can't wait to prove everybody
wrong. It's like a walk-on here as
exactly.
Well. You had a pretty good career there in Arizona.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that.
DeBeer, offensive line. We'll get his name right eventually. And
his first name's a rough one.
Try it. I'm
Garrett.
Not close.
When he says it, I can imitate him, but I can't pull it out of the air and just say
it. Get him back in here.
All right, we got that on. I'm going to go back and listen to the recording.
We thank you for joining us. That's what we learned from today's show. We also learned what you think about the Bills' newcomers. Our Twitter poll today was of the Bills' offseason additions. Who do you think will have the biggest impact in 2018? Overwhelmingly, 59% of you say it's the middle linebacker, Tremaine Edmonds. Josh Allen, 26% of you say the quarterback. 13% say Brian Daboll, 2% say somebody else. Steve, we got a heck of a show coming up tomorrow. Not that today was bad. Ben Boland's going to join us tomorrow. Covers the Patriots. He's at the owners' meetings. We'll talk with him about the Patriots and the owners' meetings. But also, tomorrow is the big media day for this week of OTAs, and we're going to hear from the morning comments from head coach Sean McDermott. We expect to hear from Josh Allen, A.J. McCarron, Nathan Peterman, Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, all of them.
We're going to have sound from all those guys. They'll hit the podium, and maybe we'll get a chance to do a little live interview if I can get over there and get them after practice or whatever. But we also get a chance to go out there and watch them.
Yeah.
You know, get them, watch them slinging around at a little higher level, because we've seen the level of intensity raise significantly, and it'll be fun to watch those guys spin it with a little higher level of intensity.
So join us tomorrow at 12 noon for the show. We want to thank our production assistants, George Blass, Jeff Colton, Nick Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, Kevin Cargis, and James Roble, our producer, Jay Harris. Good show tomorrow. Pretty good show today. Happy about it. And we'll see you tomorrow at noon. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy for Steve Tasker on Buffalo Bills Radio.